Good morning. I'd like to call the California Coastal Commission to order and ask Ms. Miller to call the roll, please.
Commissioner April.
Here.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner McClure.
Here.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Commissioner Garcia.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
You have a quorum.
All right. Thank you very much. Changes to the agenda.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. First, for the public, if anybody would like to address the commission today, you need to fill out a speaker slip and can be found in the back of the room at the table, and then please give it to a member of staff here. Also, at this time, would you please either turn off your cell phones or put them in quiet mode? Thank you. And then regarding changes to the agenda today, there are two. On page 14, item 8A, which is the application by Venico for a power cable replacement, we are moving that item to consent. Also on page 14, item 9D, which is the consistency determination for the Navy fuel pier, that item has been postponed, and that ends agenda changes. And then that's all for me for now.
All right, thank you. We will take public comment now, and I have a speaker slip from Mandy Davis. Is Mandy Davis here? All right. In which case, we will move on to the North Coast District.
For the North Coast District Director's Report today, we have just to report two waivers to you. We've received no objections to the issuance of these, and so we ask your concurrence in the Executive Director's determination.
Thank you. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
And then that takes us to the energy and federal consistency portion of today's agenda. Now, the first item that I have is item 6A. This is informational only. I won't take too much of your time. The commission has received a proposal by the oil company PXP to revise the development and production plan for Platform Hidalgo. Hidalgo is located in federal waters offshore of Santa Barbara County, and is currently producing oil and gas from what's called the Point Arguello field. And in 1984, this commission concurred in a consistency certification for that platform. This revision would allow PXP to use two existing well slots to drill into a different oil field, the one that's called the Electra field. It's located about 3 miles west of the Hidalgo platform and is within already federal oil and gas leased area. Now, the original approval for this platform did not contemplate drilling into this field, which is why this project requires a revision to the development plan. And PXP would use existing well slots, pipelines, and other facilities. There's no new offshore or onshore infrastructure or construction required for this. And the wells would produce for about 6 years and within the remaining productive life of the Point Arguello field. There's a section of the federal consistency regulations that provides that no federal consistency review is required if a proposed revision to a development plan will not result in an effect on a coastal use or resource in a way that is substantially different than what the understanding of effects were at the time that the commission approved the original project. And after analyzing this revision, we believe it will not cause new coastal resource effects. And so we provided you with a draft letter that we intend to send to PXP and to the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management that includes our analysis to support that conclusion. This is the kind of no new effects letter that the federal consistency staff would typically just issue. But because this is an offshore oil and gas drilling matter, which can attract significant public interest, we decided to inform the commission of this proposal, schedule it for public comment and commission input prior to staff finalizing its determination. And in the interest of time, I'm not going to walk you through the details of our analysis, but I will say that we consider this somewhat akin to a minor amendment to a permit. The two well slots were originally approved to be used to drill into the Point Arguello field, and this change would essentially allow PXP to drill into a different direction and into a different field. And we believe that the revision will not result in an expansion of operations or impacts greater than what the Commission understood and considered when it approved the original Hidalgo development plan. Now, I have coordinated with Santa Barbara County Energy Division, and they agree with our staff analysis and conclusion. And otherwise, to date, I've received no comments on this, written or oral. And that concludes my briefing, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions the commissioners have for staff? No? Okay, thank you.
And that takes us to the consent calendar portion of the agenda. And as I mentioned earlier, we moved one matter to the consent calendar, which is the Venico power cable project. The applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendations and the conditions, and we've received no other comments, and so we ask that you approve the consent calendar.
Thank you. Have there been any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, the will of the commission. Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey, and in willingness for unanimous yes vote. Seeing none, we unanimously approve the consent item.
And Mark Delaplane will present the next item.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. The next item is the Navy's consistency determination for its testing and training in Hawaii and Southern California waters. And this is, of course, the California version of the activity. The state of Hawaii is reviewing the other part. This is the third time this commission has reviewed Navy Southern California testing and training. First time was in 06-07. That was for a two-year period, pending completion of an environmental impact statement. And then in 2008, the Navy submitted a consistency determination for the subsequent 5 years. This particular five-year period that's before you now has also been has also included additional activities, really more for NEPA purposes as much as anything else, but they've added water areas off of the Silver Strand Training Complex. And for NEPA purposes, they've combined it with their Hawaii activities. But what's before you are the activities offshore of California. The staff recommendation is for conditional concurrence. The approach the staff's taking on this matter is fairly similar to the approach we've taken the last two times the commission's reviewed this. And to make sure you have it, an addendum was passed out last night to the commissioners, making a couple of changes to the conditions, the most substantive one being we're adding fin whale high concentration areas seasonally in the summer and fall to what we had in the conditions before about avoiding blue whale concentration areas. We're also making a few other wording clarifications to the conditions, and we're attaching as an exhibit a letter we recently found a copy of from the NOAA administrator to the Council on Environmental Quality chair, which had some insightful points, including and points that reinforced the staff's recommendation, which are that what we call time area closures or setting aside particularly sensitive areas are the most effective way to protect these types of habitats. It also concludes with an expectation that the Navy will be open to new ideas and approaches in their activities. So we're adding that as an exhibit to the staff recommendation. I'd like to go through the slides. The first slide we have shows the overall Southern California training area. It's a very large area. A lot of it's off of Mexico, but a lot of the activities are taking place near the offshore islands, and the commission's reviewing, as far as we're concerned, all of those activities that affect species that spend any portions of their life cycle in the coastal zone. This is a second map showing some of the operating areas nearer to shore. And then we have the in the blue crust, blue lines, the what we call the SOAR range. That's an area that's instrumented, has underwater listening devices, and is used for passive acoustic monitoring. Also other training areas are shown around that, west of San Clemente Island. The options for you in terms of your vote today, if you take no action, the activity is deemed concurred. Your other options are to concur as proposed, to conditionally concur, or to object to the activity. in federal consistency, if a federal agency does not agree to the conditions, then the action is treated as an objection. And there are two kinds of objections the commission can adopt. One is an objection based on the merits, based on inconsistency with Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act, or the commission can object based on lack of information. If you object based on the merits, then you have an obligation to identify measures, if they exist, that would bring the activity into consistency. And to some degree, our conditional concurrence recommendations are, if a matter is treated as an objection, are viewed as those measures that would bring the project into consistency. If you object based on lack of information, then your obligation is to identify why that information is needed in order to for you to make a decision about the consistency with Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act. The threshold for jurisdiction under federal consistency is not the location of the activity, but the effects and whether there are effects on coastal resources. The legal test for you is consistency with Chapter 3 to the maximum extent practicable, which has a definition in the Coastal Zone Management Act, which means that the activity must be fully consistent unless full consistency is prohibited by existing law. If there is a dispute between the commission and a federal agency, as has occurred in the past with Navy training and testing, under the consistency rules, the federal agency can proceed. An objection is not a veto. The activity has to be consistent. And there can be mediation for the negotiations. There can be litigation started by either side. This matter actually went through in the 2006 case, did go through mediation, litigation. And if the courts find an activity is inconsistent, there also can be a presidential exemption. And the only use of a presidential exemption occurred in the context of Navy Southern California training. The staff's recommending 7 conditions, a lot of them with the language to the maximum extent feasible, trying to provide a little bit of flexibility, but trying to also establish some ground rules and some overall policy. We would like to see, as we've recommended in the past, larger safety zones, larger preclusion areas. We're asking for a safety zone out to 2 kilometers. The proposal by the Navy would, at 1,000 yards, would if a marine mammal is seen, would turn the sonar down by 6 decibels, which is a halving of the power level. At 500 yards, it would be another 4 decibels for a total. So at 500 yards, there would be a 10 decibel reduction. And if a marine mammal is seen within 200 yards, then they would shut down. I'll show in the next map the areas that we have, but we're asking for avoidance of National Marine Sanctuaries, Marine Protected Areas, blue and fin whale areas that we've identified that are on the map that we'll show next. Seasonally, in the June to November periods, summer and fall, and then the fairly well-known gray whale migration corridors. Also, a 1 kilometer from shore avoidance area to protect coastal bottlenose dolphins. And if NIMS in the future designates additional biologically sensitive areas, biologically important areas, we would ask that those be added in to the restrictions. We would like to see avoidance or reduced power during low visibility conditions, to the extent not inconsistent with training needs or the testing needs, a normal 10-knot speed during in the sensitive areas such as the Santa Barbara Channel and when transiting and in the biologically significant areas noted. We would like to see some continuation of their study of the effectiveness of their observer training, and if certain standards aren't met and it can't be shown that the training is adequate, that we're asking for requirements that would say that only NIMS-certified observers would be used, would be committed to. We have a condition about the use of time delay during explosives testing. There was an incident where three or four dolphins died in the San Diego near shore area, and it was considered to be a rare incident, and the Navy has improved the mitigation, reduced the timer lengths, increased the visibility monitoring, but our feeling is that if this were to happen even one more time, that it's less of an anomalous incident, and we would like to see either a commitment to some better technology so that they can be turned off, or at a minimum some aerial monitoring for all of those types of activities once an activity like that were to occur. And then finally, we have a condition related to a survey the Navy undertook with commercial fishermen where there were recommendations made to improve communications, and we would like to see them continue to follow up and implement those measures or explain to the Commission why doing that would be a problem. This slide shows the areas that we've identified based on whale surveys. The pink and green are the marine protected areas, the federal and state marine protected areas. The blue shapes are the blue whale seasonal areas we would like to see them avoid, and the yellow, which to some degree overlap with the blue shapes, are the fin whale areas. So again, the blue and the yellow areas would be June through November, avoid to the maximum extent feasible, with a 4-kilometer buffer around the edges of those areas. We've provided in the staff report some analysis of some important studies that have come out since the Commission last acted. Three that are worth highlighting are studies of tagged blue whales showing alteration of foraging dives at less than 142 decibels. And we think because beaked whales are the species that tend to be the most associated with strandings due to sonar, this is important information indicating that lower thresholds for this species are absolutely appropriate. We had a beaked whale population study which posed a hypothesis and indicated that further study was needed, but indicated there's a possibility that beaked whale declines off of the West Coast could be due to military sonar activities. It also could be due to ecosystem changes or some combination of factors, but it raises concerns. And then we have a blue whale study where blue whale calls were reduced by 50% during Southern California training activities, showing changes in behavior. We did the received levels of those for those whales weren't documented, so we don't have exact numbers for what the levels they received, but it was a noticeable decline in calling. It was temporary during the sonar. In terms of the just overall numbers, what you see in the staff report, we have a disagreement with the Navy over which species should be counted as coastal species, but even if you just limit your review to the Navy's species list, you still have close to 500,000 behavioral harassments a year, and over 90 what they call level A takes, which are injury or mortality. If you use the Commission staff's interpretation, which is almost all of the species are coastal species, then we're getting closer to 2 million behavioral harassments a year and over 300 level A injury or mortality takes. The vast majority of these harassments are dolphins, porpoises, and sea lions, and according to the Navy's model, they believe that their mitigation measures would eliminate mortality from pretty much everything except for vessel strikes, and which numbers are very low. And so they believe there's still a potential under their estimates for injury, but not necessarily mortality. Then we thought we would just put together one or two slides, because the PG&E matter was before you fairly recently, just showing the differences between an air gun array sound and a mid-frequency sonar sound. Towards the top of the slide, it shows the hearing ranges of the various groups of species. In the middle of the slide, you'll see in terms of the frequency that the high-energy survey, the air gun, is at a lower frequency, which does mean the SAVL travels farther, and the mid-frequency, aptly named, is more in the middle of the frequency spectrum. And at the bottom of the slide, we have a couple of numbers. The ones in red are highlighted, showing that the air gun array is about 20 decibels louder, which is two orders of magnitude more intense. The acousticians don't like us to use the word louder, but 10 decibel increase is an order of magnitude. The power is significantly more. The rise time for a air gun array, it's more like an explosion, so the rise time, which can cause physical injury, is faster. And also the air gun array, the vessels were moving slower, which can mean more harassments depending on where the animals are, or a single animal receiving more harassments. And then it's a constant barrage over days, weeks, 24 hours day and night, whereas the sonar activities are more in the order of a testing and an exercise of 1 to 3 hours. And just, again, a list of some of the differences. We've touched on some of those. But a couple other distinctions. The air gun array proposal was a new area. There is a concern about whales being exposed to sounds that they're not used to. It was nearer to shore. We had a particularly sensitive species, the harbor porpoise, that's not present in the Navy case. That was causing us the most concern. And then there was just fundamental questions in the commission's mind as to what the benefits were of that survey and whether it was worth doing the activity and what we were going to do with the information that we got from that survey. So the benefits, as well as whether they were using the most appropriate technology, were also questioned. We're not questioning the Navy's need to train, so we think that's an important distinction the commission should consider. So that concludes the slides. I would summarize with, as I mentioned, we have a disagreement over which species are coastal species. We've provided in the staff report a number of exhibits which we feel fairly easily and clearly document that almost all the species, with the possible exception of sei whales and spotted dolphins, are in the coastal zone, are found in the coastal zone and are coastal species. We have a question about the Navy's conclusion about population level effects. Given that they've been training in this area for 40 years, it's difficult to say what the baseline is, what would have occurred absent the Navy training. So it's hard to be comfortable with those types of conclusions. But even if you were going to concede that point, you still have other Coastal Act policies that come into play, protect special areas, and that's where our conditions are directed at, trying to protect special areas and minimize harm to marine resources. I would mention that we received a letter this morning from surveyor, researcher John Kalamakitos, reinforcing concerns about vessel strikes and blue whales, and noting that the numbers of blue whales in this area, in the Southern California, have not been increasing in recent years. He's not speculating that that's due to sonar. That may be due to other ecosystem effects, but it's raising a concern about blue whales that should be looked at. And then finally, I would just point out that the National Marine Fisheries Service, whose review is over the Navy's activities for both California and Hawaii, as well as their other ranges, their review of this proposal is still up for public comment. They've issued a preliminary decision of no significant adverse effects, but they are still taking public comments and have not made a final decision. And with that, we'll conclude our recommendation. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any ex partes on this item? Commissioner Zimmer.
Apologies in advance for the length of this. It's a long topic. On March 4th, 2013, from 10:15 till 11 a.m., I had a telephone conference with Michael Jasny and Julia Stefani of the NRDC and Susan Jordan of the California Coastal Protection Network. They indicated that the only Navy communications they have had from the Navy regarding their willingness to implement mitigation measures have been that they did not implement prior conditions or mitigations and have no intention of implementing them at this time. Jordan and Jasny believe that the Navy is more sensitive to resources when they are operating on land than on water. Jasny indicated that the Pacific Fleet has been averse to doing any mitigation, and based on internal Navy documents, it seems to them that their primary concern has been precedent, that they're worried that if they agree once to mitigations, they will have to agree to similar things forever and in all contexts. They've been adamant, even though it is possible, according to NRDC, to design mitigation taking into account practicability. They've never implemented any mitigations that the Coastal Commission has tried to impose on concurrence with a consistency determination. In two cases, the Navy disregarded the Coastal Commission entirely, and they're quite upfront about that. NRDC thinks it's highly unlikely that should the Coastal Commission set conditions that they will behave any different way. So NRDC has concluded that the proper course is to object outright. Staff really tried to work with the Navy, and that shows in their prior and current recommendations. Susan Jordan indicated that they can no longer continue to recommend conditional concurrence if they know they're not going to comply with conditions, because then we are not protecting the resource. She indicated the application is deficient, as well as the analysis of environmental impacts. Jasny indicated that they have covered only 10 of the more than 30 species in California, roughly 34 occurring within state coastal waters, which is the standard for the scope of consistency review under the CZMA. Among those they have not included are all of the endangered species. For example, the beaked whale. Southern California is a beaked whale hotspot, the species most vulnerable to sonar. They would rationalize this by saying that these species do not occur in the coastal zone. This is occurring within a pattern where the Navy has resisted submitting a full consistency determination. In 2007, it was even more absolutist and did not admit to any active sonar, claiming it was taking place beyond the coastal zone. We discussed that there are two possible outcomes to an objection. One is litigation. The other is that the Navy does negotiate. They felt that was unlikely, that there would be some chance of it happening if there is an outright objection. He then described in some detail the prior cases in 2007-2008 where the courts affirmed mitigation measures, including some that the Coastal Commission had set, upon which the Navy went to the Council of Environmental Quality and received a waiver on the NEPA issues. And then there was a separate waiver issued by President Bush on the CZMA. The constitutionality of these waivers then became the focus of the litigation. The primary focus was on NEPA. The district court found both waivers unconstitutional, finding that the executive branch was improperly overturning a judicial ruling. He indicated that the waivers in 2007-2008 were orchestrated by Vice President Cheney and the White House legal staff. Jasny believes it would be a lot less likely to happen in the current administration. But they clarified that the CZMA waiver was the significant administrative action that prevented mitigation from occurring. The Navy has not said anything specific about the study that identifies the sonar as the cause of the decline of the beaked whale population. They respond generally that they've been doing this for 40 years. Jasny states that there has been a significant decline in the last couple of decades, maybe in the neighborhood of 40% to 60% over the last 20 years. In addition, there is a threefold increase in the number of impacts. He stated that the Navy has not attempted to justify their failure to identify location and timing for proposed activities. In the EIS, they only refer to flexibility for training, but there is no analysis of any particular area in the vast Southern California range. Jasny stated that it defies logic that they cannot avoid or reduce activities in a range that is 120,000 square miles in size to avoid biologically important sensitive areas. The Navy presupposes that the time area restrictions are absolute. That is not correct. The proposed condition had included practicability in its language and that there be some procedure and transparency to make sure this happens. Jasny stated that their argument does not reflect the effort that the Coastal Commission staff and NRDC have made to include practicability. The time area closures are very important. In 2010, Dr. Jane Lubchenco of NOAA wrote a memo to CEQ that asserts that this is the best available means to mitigate. The fact that the Navy did not consider any specific areas to avoid, even though we know that Southern California is a globally important habitat for blue whales, beaked whales, and gray whale migration, resists the best available science. That's it.
Commissioner Pacheco.
Yes. On February 28th at 3:30 in the afternoon, I had a telephone conversation with Susan Jordan and Julia Stephanie, I believe, from NRDC, the substance of which is the same as Commissioner Zimmer's.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 25th at 4 p.m., I also had a very detailed, I believe it was about 45-minute conversation with Susan Jordan, Director of the California Coastal Protection Network, on behalf of the NRDC. I believe the other gentleman was Michael Jasny as well. We discussed the sheer scale of this five-year SONAR program, that it is unprecedented and significantly larger than they have proposed before. In 2008, when the Navy's training and testing activities in Southern California came before the commission, the Navy estimated its activities would result in 632,000 instances of harm to marine mammals. The Navy now estimates 8.8 million instances of harm. As such, it's representing 13 times additional harm. There are two basic problems with the Navy's analysis. First, the Navy states without proper analysis that its proposed activities will have no population-level impacts on marine mammals, but the amount of take, instances of harm to marine mammals, belies that conclusion. For multiple species, the take numbers significantly exceed the population size. For beaked whales, who are deep divers known to be highly sensitive to the sonar, who are the most likely to strand with organ damage, there has been a 40 to 60% decline in their population numbers off this area of California. The NOAA study that was recently released identifies anthropogenic sound and Navy sonars as one of only two possible causes for this decline. And that was Moore and Barlow, 2013. For blue whales, there are only 3,000 to 4,000 remaining in the world, and each year about 1,000 of them come to these waters to forage. Researchers from Scripps have found that when the sonar is operating, the blue whales go silent and emit no decals, which are closely associated with foraging behavior. Secondly, the standard the Navy has to meet is to maintain, enhance, and restore, which these exercises do not do. Further, the Navy omits more than 20 species of marine mammals, including endangered species, from its consistency analysis, despite the fact these species are well known to occur in or transport through the coastal zone area. We review the hours of sonar and munitions to provide a picture of the intensity of the exercises. The Navy proposes to engage in over 10,000 hours of active sonar annually to conduct over 51,000 underwater explosive detonations each year and to detonate over 250 explosives greater than 500 pounds per year. Excuse me. Is it 5,000? Yeah. The mitigation that the Navy is proposing is inadequate. They do not provide for any avoidance of biologically important areas referred to as time area closures, which have in the past been recommended in a memo by Jane Lipchenko, the former head of the National Marine Fisheries Service. The Navy is relying on observers to dictate shutdowns, and everyone, including NOAA, has acknowledged that relying solely on observers is inadequate. Staff has recommended a series of mitigation measures. We have additions which are, they talked about it, having additions which are listed in their letter. I did receive a briefing booklet as well. The most important of which is avoid harm to the maximum extent feasible if the exercises take place, is time area closures in biologically important areas. With that in mind, they have gathered information from scientists and mapped what they believe to be the most sensitive coastal habitat that needs to be protected. Staff included the gray whale corridor and important blue whale areas, but did not include important fin or beaked whale areas that they believe should also be protected. They talked about the biggest challenge for the commission in dealing with an agency in their opinion that has not complied and had some examples of noncompliance with prior conditional concurrences, and felt that it would be difficult for the Navy to comply or would not comply. So they urged an objection to the current application, that an outright objection could also include findings by the Commission and signal to the Navy that the Commission is willing to work with them, that the Navy should come back and commit to reasonable mitigation measures, and that we as the Coastal Commission should not tolerate 8.8 million instances of harm to California's marine mammals. Finally, the last point they made was that the Commission is going to have to assess the cumulative impacts of these exercises, particularly given the new research that attributes decline in populations to anthropogenic noise, specifically sonar, that we shouldn't ignore the impacts built up over time and are not distinct and unrelated. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. On Friday, March 1st, at 10 a.m., I had about a 30-minute phone conversation with Ms. Jordan of Coastal Advocates and Ms. Stefani of NRDC. We focused on several aspects around mitigation, the conflict between issuing the conditional concurrence based on mitigation measures that the groups believed would not be implemented, and the strong feeling that they had was that an outright objection was the appropriate way to go, given that past concurrence efforts have not been respected by the Navy in terms of implementation of the identified mitigation measures. We also talked about their concern that the Navy hasn't completed their application in their expectations, excluding 24 species, including endangered species, and using different standards to assert that the proposed program is consistent with the CCMP. They also talked about the concern between the staff recommendation and their own, and pointed out that endangered fin and beaked whales have not been adequately identified by the staff in terms of the mitigations that would be recommended. And they were concerned about ship-based observation being the sole source of observation. So I would say that was what we spoke about.
All right, thank you. On March 4th at 9 in the morning, I had a conference call with Michael Jasny of NRDC, Julia Stefani, NRDC, and Susan Jordan of the California Coastal Protection Network. They said that the commission, what was before the commission was a strategic decision, that in the past the commission has conditioned concurrences and the Navy has totally ignored it. Under those conditions, the concurrence is meaningless if the Navy is going to ignore all of our conditions. They said what's before us is a incomplete application. There's species left out. They've ignored populations. And this is an unprecedented level of impact beyond anything we've seen before. They urged that the commission should ask the Navy to return with an application that addresses the deficiencies. And they also said that the winter decision before the Supreme Court does not apply to what's before us today. The Supreme Court reached no findings on the merits. NRDC has mapped foraging areas for all of the marine mammals, and other than that, we talked about procedure. Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On March 4th at 1 p.m., I had a conference, telephone conference call with Michael Jasny from NRDC, Julia Stefani from NRDC, and Susan Jordan with the California Coastal Protection Network, excuse me. The substance of which has been reported thoroughly by commissioners ahead of me, and just want to reemphasize that they did say that in the past the commission has conditioned the Navy and those conditions have not been upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure.
Thank you. I received the briefing packet that I think everyone else received, and then I also had a very lengthy email from Susan Jordan that covered the briefing packet prior to receiving the briefing packet. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Mitchell.
On March 1st at 1 p.m., I had a call with Susan Jordan and the folks from NRDC, and the substance of which has been covered.
Thank you. Commissioner Garcia.
On February the 26th at 4 p.m., I also had a telephone call with Susan Jordan as well as members of the NRDC team, the substance of which has been covered by all the commissioners. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other ex partes? All right. Seeing none, I will open the public hearing and call the Navy. I believe Commander John Doney is going to start us off. And if you could say how much time you would like to have.
Madam Commissioner, I request 20 minutes.
All right. And would you like to keep three of those at the end for rebuttal?
No.
All right. Thank you.
For the record, I am John Doney, J-O-H-N-D-O-N-E-Y, and I am a commander in the United States Navy. Good morning, commissioners, staff, and my California neighbors here behind me. I am, along with Mr. Alex Stone and Mr. Chip Johnson, going to talk about the Navy's position here. And let's see if this works. Excellent. This topic is very keen to what I do in the Navy. It relates directly to my job. I am the director of exercises at U.S. Third Fleet here in San Diego, and I've been in that position for 5 years now. I am also a submarine officer, and this is my trade to work within the ocean and under the ocean. I have spent several years of my life living and operating under the oceans. And it is a very unforgiving environment, but also a wondrous environment. Third Fleet's primary mission is to train, certify, and deploy combat-ready naval forces. And to execute that mission, it is my job to provide relevant, realistic training to the sailors before they go into harm's way. So here's the crux of what we are here today to talk about. Bottom line up front, the Navy believes that the Hawaii, Southern California testing and training proposed activities are consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program without the inclusion of the staff report's conditions. For the agenda today, I will talk about testing and training in the Southern California Range Complex, and Mr. Alex Stone will discuss the background of the environmental impact statement, and also he will discuss the report's conditions. The Southern California, also known as SoCal Range Complex, is the principal U.S. Navy training venue in the Pacific. It is a unique set of on- and offshore ranges that provide realistic and relevant training and testing to our sailors to effectively prepare them for combat operations, all the way from a strike group of 6,000 sailors down to the individual members of an underwater demolition team. So you may ask, why does the Navy need to train so much? I will relate this to an example of a play being given in a theater. First, you need the theater to do the play. For me, the Southern California Range Complex is that theater. And you simply don't get the cast and crew together on Monday, tell them to go learn their lines and their roles, and come back on Friday and do a live show. It doesn't work out too well that way. Instead, what you do is you get each cast member together. Individually at first, they learn their parts. So for me, it's the crew on each unit. They learn their skill sets. And then they'll rehearse a scene together in small groups. That is my unit level training. Everyone on that platform learns to operate that platform to max efficiency. And then they rehearse the acts of the play and they get the stage hands. For me, that's the group training, where we get multiple platforms of different types to work together. And then you'll do a full dress rehearsal. For me, that is a large-scale training exercise. And then they'll put on the live show. For me, that's sending those units on deployment. So bottom line here, our Navy is the premier Navy in the world today. And that is attributed to one key factor. We are the best trained Navy in the world. The Southern California ranges are, hands down, the cornerstone of our Navy's readiness on the West Coast. The key points on this slide help illustrate their importance to Navy training and testing, in particular, that proximity matters in time, space, and resources. The Southern California ranges allow me to the opportunity to train multiple forces at the same time or not, and to train efficiently, especially with limited resources. The unique training terrain, especially the bathymetry, allows me to train in deep ocean waters, the littoral waters, shallow water, all the way up to and on the land, and of course, the airspace above it. And it is those transitions between those areas I will demonstrate is kind of what makes Southern California ranges so unique for my training. It should not be lost that the Navy has been operating and training in the Southern California areas for over 70 years. And even today, the SoCal ranges are the most capable ranges the Navy has. And with the nation's rebalance to the Pacific, there will be even more training focused here. There is no other set of ranges allowing training across the full mission areas of the Navy, from basic levels to large-scale pre-deployment training exercises that Southern California ranges permit me to do. So why does the Navy need to use active sonar? And recall that sonar is an acronym for sound navigation and ranging. Well, we have an evolving anti-submarine warfare challenge, and it's been growing over the last few decades. It is the quiet diesel-electric submarine. Right now, at least 40 nations operate up to 500 submarines around the world, of which about 350 are the quiet diesel-electric submarines. And those numbers are growing. The submarines of yesterday, we'll give an example of the Russians. They had many nuclear submarines. They were had loud acoustic signatures. They operated in open ocean, allowing long-range passive sonar detection, and there were many of them. Well, things have changed. The landscape has changed. Now we have these quiet diesel-electric submarines coming online more with better technology. They're quieter. They have longer endurance. And the diesel submarines tend to operate in the littorals near the coast, also in choke points like straits. And passive sonar is very ineffective for locating those threat submarines in that noisy environment. Active sonar becomes the most effective tool to locate and track those diesel submarines and the threat they present. And you may ask me, what threat? Well, in fact, 3 years ago this month, a South Korean warship sank in the Yellow Sea. It sank in less than 5 minutes. It broke in half after the explosion, and 46 crew members died of 104. The international investigation that occurred after that determined it was most likely a North Korean midget submarine torpedo that sank that South Korean warship. So I would submit the threat is real and the threat is out there. The diverse bathymetry in the Southern California Range Complex is why our anti-submarine warfare training is very effective. I'm going to relate the training of a sonar operator to teaching your teenager to drive. And I'm on my third teenager right now, so I'm still okay. No accidents. But you don't put that teenager in the car right away and have them drive down I-5 during rush hour on their first drive. Not going to work. So similarly, with the sonar operators, I need to train them in a quiet environment. So let's say the empty parking lot. That's where you're going to start your teenager driving, in that empty parking lot. And then as they get more comfortable, you're going to work to higher traffic densities. So I'm going to go from my open ocean towards the coast, towards the littorals, and the topography will change. It'll get shallower, and it'll get noisier with more shipping traffic and fishing traffic. So I will help train those operators to pick out and discern that threat submarine from passive sonar usage to active sonar usage. And also some of the unique topography we have, the bathymetry in Southern California, it emulates other areas around the world that these sailors will deploy to and be operating in. So we're giving them some very good training in that respect. So bottom line, Southern California provides the world-class training complex that produces the best trained sailors in the world. I'll turn the brief over to Mr. Alex Stone. And commissioners, once again, thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Alex Stone. It's A-L-E-X-S-T-O-N-E. And I am the project manager for the Hawaii SoCal EIS and consistency determination. I'd like to thank you, the commissioners, and I'd like to thank the staff, especially Mark Delaplane. We haven't always agreed with the commission in the past, but we have a very good relationship with Mark, and I really appreciate Mark's time and understanding our activities and working with us. It's a long-term relationship, and we're very happy with everything that Mark's done. And it's a pleasure to be here to talk about our environmental program. It's something in the Navy that we're very proud of. I also was the project manager for the prior consistency determinations that we did for the Southern California Range Complex, the Silver Strand one, which was done more recently, and the series of exercises consistency determination that Mark discussed earlier. I have sort of an expertise in this area, but I lead a large group of Navy environmental professionals who dedicate their time to protecting the environment, yet supporting Navy training. So I'm glad to be talking to you on behalf of our whole team. I'm going to talk about really two things. Background on the HSTT consistency determination, and I'll try and go through that pretty quickly since I think Mark did a pretty good job. And then I'm going to address specifically the conditions that are in the staff report. So for the HSTT background, we've We've completed the two prior consistency determinations, and what we're doing in the HSTT, as part of a nationwide effort, we're consolidating these range documents in the permits. So we're back now with HSTT, which combines the in-water areas of these documents as well as the Hawaii Range Complex. It also builds on the first round documents by providing more comprehensive analysis of all the sources that we use. It brings in testing, where the prior documents, the focus was more on training. It also includes more areas where we do testing and training, such as pier side locations, as well as the transit lanes between Southern California and Hawaii. It's also updated to reflect the current requirements that we have in the Pacific. As Commander Doney mentioned, we're moving a focus of our forces to the Pacific, and a commensurate level of training increase is reflected in our proposal. Also allows for surge in any given year. The permits that I'll talk about that are tied to this are absolute caps, so we have to ensure that we have enough capacity in these permits to account for a given year when we may have a surge in activities. Not likely to happen in every year, but that's why when it's characterized that we're having a huge increase, a lot of this is to give us flexibility where we need it. Focus of the analysis and the discussion really is sonar and explosives, but the documents and our consistency determination looks at everything. And the last point is kind of why we're here today, what brings us back, and why we're on the timeline and why we're doing this document is we have a 5-year permit from the National Marine Fisheries Service under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. That permit expires in January 2014. So the HSTT EIS is an effort to support the permit process, and that's why we're here today. As I mentioned in the last slide, the MMPA process is really central to the HSTT. So we have a longstanding and close relationship with the National Marine Fisheries Service. They're a formal cooperating agency on this document, and we're working very closely with them. We've worked with them to develop and apply the latest criteria for assessing impacts to marine mammals. Also, we've developed a new model for predicting acoustic impacts. We're using the best available data on marine species. And NIMS has worked cooperatively with us as we have developed and implemented an extensive set of mitigation measures that I'm going to talk a little bit more on the next slide. Recently, as I think Mark mentioned, NIMS published the MMPA proposed rule, which is the regulation that will govern our activities for the next 5 years. In the proposed rule, NIMS has concluded that our activities would have a negligible impact on marine mammals. As I said, we've worked very hard to develop the best scientific approach to assessing marine mammals. Part of that analysis is to quantify exposures or takes using modeling and marine species density and abundance. The quantification is required for the permit process, but when we discuss these takes, it's important, and these large numbers, it's important to understand several key points. First, the vast, vast majority of these takes are temporary behavioral modifications in the animal's behavior only. The numbers from the model are what we use to support the permit process, but they're very conservative and they overestimate the takes, and we would not expect those to occur. And the model also does not fully account for the effectiveness of our mitigation, which we think would certainly avoid the more serious types of impacts that you would expect closer to the activities. Again, looking at our activities from a population and stock level, we feel there would be no impact. And again, based on years of monitoring our activities, doing these same activities in these same locations, we do not expect these takes would occur. And except for several rare cases, there's no evidence of impacts to marine mammals from decades of Navy training in SoCal. And again, no impact to populations or stocks. Mitigation measures. As I mentioned before, with NIMS, we've developed and implemented a comprehensive suite of mitigation measures. Most are already in place. We've reassessed all of our mitigation measures in HSTT, made refinements. The mitigation measures are proven to work. That's one thing that's really important, is our mitigation measures need to work out in the real world where we're training deploying forces. And these really do work. They're a part of the culture of the Navy. You can go on board any ship, and you'll be immediately impressed by how seriously the mitigation measures are taken and implemented. In addition to the mitigation measures, we have an extensive monitoring and research program that we do in Southern California. We've gotten better species data. We've contributed to the overall understanding of marine mammals. And also, we're an important partner in the stranding response program with the National Marine Fisheries Service. Just briefly, this is not a full list, but we have an extensive suite of mitigation measures developed around each different training and testing event. They're designed to be effectively implemented and to avoid and minimize environmental impacts. This is just a partial list for active sonar. Mark talked a little bit about this, but we always operate sonar at the lowest practical level. We have safety zones. We monitor using not just lookouts, but also using passive acoustics for vocalizing marine mammals. And our lookouts are highly trained, and we also use optic systems. A question that we'll talk about is low visibility. We also use optic systems that allow us to see in low visibility conditions. Okay, so with that and with my remaining time, I'd like to talk about the staff report recommended conditions. And before I do, just the first point is, in developing the mitigation measures that the Navy has and that we're proposing for this project, we looked at a huge suite and range of mitigation measures, including the ones that the conditions in the staff recommendation, and as well as others. We looked at really everything, and we've had a public process throughout this whole thing from this round and the prior round. And in our EIS, we explained very carefully the process we used in considering those and the ones that were eliminated and why. So I sort of invite you for a more thorough discussion than I'm going to give today to look at our documents where we address all of the conditions and why we aren't implementing them. So with that, I'll go through the safety, the staff seven recommendations. The first one is larger safety zones. And our safety zones have been developed based on the model to protect against permanent threshold shift. These are the mitigation zones that are effective, can be effectively implemented based on the ships and the platforms that we're using. And a larger safety zone would compromise the realism of the training. So we feel strongly that our mitigation zones are protective of marine species and allow our training to occur. The second condition involves avoiding certain areas. We strongly feel that the mitigation that we have in place right now is effective for all areas. It's the mitigation we've been using, as I mentioned. There's no evidence of impacts from our activities. As Commander Doney explained, we rely on this large area, and when we start to segment it in little areas where you can't go here, can't go there, it really affects the training realism, especially for the type of complex training we do in Southern California, which can involve an aircraft carrier strike group with a lot of ships spread across a large area. We really need the flexibility to be able to use the entire area. Third condition, I'm going to go fast since I'm running out of time, night and low visibility. We have our mitigation, we believe, works at night as we use systems that are designed to see at night and passive acoustics. And also, we have a need to train 24 hours a day, especially the oceanographic acoustic conditions are different at night, and we require training in that environment, as well as the duration of the training. If you're tracking a submarine, that training event may cross over into the night, so we need to be able to train at night. Vessel speeds. Navy vessels have lookouts at all times and are always driven in a way that maximizes safety and a speed that is safe for the vessel. The fifth condition is about effectiveness training. The Navy is constantly looking at the effectiveness of our training for our lookouts. We're always reassessing it. I'll try and wrap up here. I'll just quickly go through the next two conditions. The next condition is about...
Actually, your time is up. So I'll give you another minute if you like, but,
okay.
But that is your time.
Okay. Just the last two conditions, as explained in the slide here, we believe we have adequately protecting the issue that is being addressed in the conditions. And I guess in conclusion, I would just reemphasize that Navy believes that our activities are consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the CCMP without the inclusion of the staff report conditions.
And thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Susan Jordan, you all have an organized presentation. All right, and you have 15 minutes, so I'll let you organize your time within that 15.
Okay, thank you, and good morning. My name is Michael Jasny. I'm director of NRDC's Marine Mammal Protection Project, and my colleagues and I are speaking today with the support of more than 30 regional, national, and international environmental organizations that are profoundly concerned about the Navy's proposal. I'm going to use my time to speak briefly about the scope of the Navy's activities and its impacts. My colleague Julia will speak to deficiencies in the Navy's consistency determination and its mitigation, and Susan Jordan will speak to the decision before you today. As you know from the Commission's review of PG&E's Diablo Canyon application, sound is the primary sense of whales and many other ocean animals. They use it to communicate, to find food, to find mates, to navigate, to avoid predators, to do just about everything they need to do to survive and reproduce in the wild. Increasingly, the scientific community has turned its attention to the cumulative impacts of human activity on marine mammals, what happens when you expose the same populations to disruptive sound over months and years, and it's in that context that we come to the Navy's new proposal. This is what the Navy has proposed for Southern California annually for 5 years beginning next January, and I'm not going to go over it because staff has covered it well, but I will mention just a couple of details that haven't been expressed thus far today, which is that the active sonar use alone constitutes about 15,000 hours just from hull-mounted mid-frequency sonar. There are more than 15,000 hours off Southern California of other high-intensity mid-frequency systems and deployment of more than 20,000 active sonobuoys, which also generate high-intensity sound. So this is really an enormous amount of activity. I've heard biologists who've worked out in the Navy's range describe with strong concern the number of potentially dangerous activities that might be taking place at any given time. So what's the impact? Well, you've seen the estimates of harm in the Navy's consistency determination. I'm just going to try to put a face on them. First, the Navy's activities would kill marine mammals. The Navy attributes most of these deaths to its underwater detonations, which range from less than a pound to more than 500 pounds of net explosive weight. The Navy tries to mitigate this by using visual observers to spot marine mammals before they enter the blast radius, but many of the Navy's explosives use timer delays that cannot be disarmed if marine mammals are spotted. And as Mark indicated earlier, that's the reason why several dolphins died in the exercise you see represented on screen off San Diego in 2011. Marine mammals were indeed detected, but the Navy couldn't halt the detonation. Sonar exercises can cause mortality as well. As you can see from this slide, many deep-diving whales killed during naval sonar exercises have shown bleeding around the brain, emboli, and organ tissue, damage to their acoustic fats. As many studies have now shown, these pathologies are consistent with a severe case of decompression sickness or the bends, caused most likely by the whales modifying their dive behavior in some circumstances in a panicked response to sonar. And it's important to point out that these injuries occur at sea and can happen without any animals coming to the beach. And the Navy estimates that there would be 130 mortalities overall over 5 years. We think for several reasons, beginning with the sheer number of detonations that they've proposed, that this is an underestimate, but the Navy's numbers are high enough. There we go.
The Navy also recognizes that its activities will cause hearing loss, which for species that depend on their hearing for so many essential life functions can be severely debilitating. The Navy estimates that more than 1,600 marine mammals would suffer permanent hearing loss over at least part of their auditory range, and it estimates that marine mammals would suffer temporary hearing loss more than 1.5 million times. Finally, the Navy's activities will continually disrupt foraging, breeding, and other vital behavior in marine mammal populations of Southern California. And notwithstanding the claim that you've just heard that the Navy hasn't seen any impacts on California marine mammals, here's a slide from just one recent study. It's a multi-year study by researchers at Scripps of Navy impacts on Southern California blue whales. And you can see in that figure on the top left, how several hours of blue whale foraging calls that are represented by that steady line of Ds is interrupted by an active sonar exercise. This was a temporary interruption. It lasted just a few hours, but compounded time and time again with the tens of thousands of hours of activity occurring on the range, this can add up to something very significant. It's important to note that the silencing was found to occur at very low exposure levels, and the Scripps study concluded that even a single sonar vessel could suppress blue whale foraging calls across, quote, a substantial portion of the Southern California Bight, unquote. And that's a big problem since Southern California is a globally important foraging area for this endangered species. And we don't have time, but suffice to say that controlled exposure studies have shown impacts from Navy sonar on a variety of species, beaked whales, killer whales, pilot whales, and so on. In all, the Navy estimates that its activities will significantly disrupt vital behaviors of marine mammals more than 8.8 million times over 5 years. And as incredible as it may sound, we think these are underestimates. The standards the Navy uses are comparatively far less conservative than those used in the Diablo Canyon EIR. They don't reflect the thresholds seen of impact seen in, for example, the blue whale study and other studies as well. But here are the Navy's numbers summed up in any case. 130 mortalities, 1,600 cases of permanent hearing loss, more than 8.8 million instances of temporary hearing loss, and biologically significant disruption. As has been said, these numbers are 13 times larger than anything the Navy has proposed before, due both to the substantial increase in activity that the Navy has talked about and new evidence indicating that impacts are greater than what the Navy previously supposed. And it's important to note, contrary to I think what Mr. Stone said, that these numbers are already take account, they are already discounted for the Navy's proposed mitigation measures. And then one final point. The Navy has said that they've been operating in Southern California using sonar here for 40 years or so and haven't seen any population level effects. Mark pointed out the problems with that assumption given the lack of any baseline data. But even putting that aside and putting aside the fact that the Navy is proposing a significant increase in activity, that argument is just no longer colorable. We've spoken, heard already about this latest study on beaked whales, which indicate that the species believed to be most acutely vulnerable to Navy sonar activities have, in fact, declined substantially in the California current over the past 20 years. And the letter that you received, this morning or last night, from the biologist John Kolumbakidis raises somewhat analogous concerns about blue whales as well in light of a failure of that species to recover. And some evidence, including some that is not published and hasn't been presented by me today, indicating how that sonar interrupts blue whale foraging at very low levels of exposure. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Julia Goodstefani, attorney with the NRDC. I will be picking up where Michael's left off. I'm going to speak very briefly about two procedural deficiencies in the Navy's consistency application. Then I'll discuss substantive deficiencies in the application and have some very practical recommendations for the Commission. Just talk briefly about the mitigation you've already seen and sort of highlight some differences between what we recommend, additions we would recommend to the staff report. The Navy identifies a mere 10 species as present within the coastal zone. The Navy excludes 24 species that marine mammal experts agree are known to be present. The Navy fails to include any of the endangered baleen whales or beaked whales in direct contradiction to widespread recognition that these species, which occur within the exercise area, also occur within 3 nautical miles of shore. A full analysis, including all of these species, is required before a consistency determination can be made. And in this way, we would say the application is deficient. Just visually for you, here's the 10 species the Navy's identified, the 24 species that we would argue the Navy has excluded. The pie chart represents the total 34 species located within the California coastal zone. Exclusion of those 24 species underrepresents the impact that the Navy's activities will have on the California coastal zone. Second procedural problem with the consistency application, federal consistency application, is that the Navy applies the wrong standard. The standard under the California Coastal Act mandates that marine species shall be maintained, enhanced, and where feasible, restored. The Navy misrepresents the standard and imports its own. The Navy asserts that its proposed action is consistent with this mandate because it has determined that there are, quote, no population level impacts. That's not the standard. Furthermore, the Navy is not maintaining, enhancing, or restoring marine species by killing 130 mammals, permanently injuring more than 1,600 mammals, and temporarily injuring millions of dolphins, seals, sea lions, otters, and whales. Thank you.
You stop the clock for a minute. I was afraid this might happen. The clock has stopped for a second. Our proceedings here, we ask you not to cheer or clap or boo, or because everybody in this room cares a great deal about these issues. And we ask that everybody give a respect to the person at the podium, because you will have your time and you will be respected as well. If you feel the need to let us know that you agree or disagree, you can wave your hands and you can put your thumb down. But I'd ask, please, no cheering and no booing and no clapping. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Yeah.
Moving on. Into the substantive problems with the Navy's application. The Navy claims that there will be no population level impacts, but the Navy fails to analyze population level impacts. The Navy's impact analysis concludes summarily that enumerated impacts will not harm any species at the population level. However, there is no such analysis. For example, the Navy states that gray whales will be taken more than 60,000 times over 4 years, and then concludes, without explanation, that there will be no individual or population long-term consequences to gray whales. The entire population of gray whales is only approximately 20,000 animals. We believe this indicates a population-level impact. In the air, EIR prepared, and this is for the Coastal Commission, who's familiar with this project, for PG&E's proposed project, there was a quantitative analysis of population impacts based on the model take. The Navy conducts no such analysis here. An analysis of this sort is possible, is the point I'm making. A complete application that includes a population-level analysis is required before the Commission can determine if the Navy's application is consistent with the Coastal Act. What the Navy has proposed. The Navy's mitigation is limited to ship-based lookouts. The Navy fails to match its dramatic increase in harm to marine mammals with an increased effort to mitigate that harm during sonar and munitions training and testing exercises. Instead, the Navy has proposed the same meager protective measures, visually monitoring a narrow area around its vessels, that the courts, the scientific community, and the Coastal Commission itself have repeatedly found inadequate. I would point out that visual area around the ships that the Navy proposes to monitor is not even large enough to encompass the area of hearing loss for marine mammals. One study found that using lookouts, the Navy had a 1 in 50 chance of detecting a beaked whale within 1 kilometer of its sonar vessel. We agree with the Coastal Commission staff report. The need for mitigation measures is even more compelling now than in the past. We have more information than we've had in the past. This chart, very quickly, there's a lot of information there. It's in your briefing pamphlets as well. I just want to point out two things about it. First of all, how similar the mitigation we propose is to what the staff proposes. That's because this is the mitigation that has been proven to work and makes sense. It's been established with a lot of effort on the part of scientific experts. And then I would point out a couple just additions that we would recommend. The addendum to the staff report included several of the additions we would recommend, so I'm going to exclude those now. I'm just going to say we would also include biologically important areas for beaked whales. And we have 3 monitoring-based recommendations. Passive acoustic monitoring prior to and during exercises, and in particular to monitor for beaked whales, which are very hard to detect under the water, but when they're above water, but underwater we can detect them, and then we would ask that the Navy discontinue its exercise or move its exercise out of the range of the beaked whales. And finally, I would just point out that all of our mitigation incorporates practicability. And I'm going to turn it over to Susan Jordan.
Thank you. Okay, let's get this. Okay, what are your choices? Susan Jordan, Director of the California Coastal Protection Network. You can concur without additional conditions, you can concur with additional conditions, or you can outright object. And in this case, we believe, we understand staff's position, but we believe that a conditional concurrence is flawed because the Navy in the past has refused to implement your conditions, and they have made it very clear they don't intend to implement them now. So what our final recommendation is to get an outright objection. And we believe that, as we've, I think, demonstrated, that their application is both technically deficient and substantively unacceptable, and it's not consistent with the Coastal Act, which is what you have to find. We believe it's extremely important for you to create a record which talks about those deficiencies and also indicates the specific mitigations that you would like to see. We believe the time area closures are very important and the monitoring. So we would ask that you do both staff's conditions and the additional ones that we suggested. But I also think it's important to send a signal to the Navy that you're open to further discussion. We understand their need for readiness. We're sympathetic to it, but we also believe that what we are proposing is both doable and practicable, and it reflects the consensus in science. So leave the door open, but tell them they have to come back with something that meets the Coastal Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to read three names at a time if you'd be prepared to take the mic. Ellen Shively, Irene Gilgoff, Bailey Adams, and you'll each have 2 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Ellen Shively. I'm the wildlife chair of the San Diego chapter of the Sierra Club. In front of this hotel, there are two harbor seals, unable to survive in the wild due to irreparable damage. One is blinded. Who knows what damage the other one has sustained? No consideration is given for the quality of their life, even though they will spend their lives in a swimming pool. How many other hotel swimming pools do we need to provide to rehabilitate, to house these animals? The Navy is proposing the mediation level of medium for the sonar, the intent of which will harm blue whales, endangered beak whales, and porpoises, and our beloved gray whales, which migrate up and down the entire coast. According to the Union Tribune, which is a local conservative Republican newspaper which serves the Navy community, and the whole San Diego is a Navy town, their survival depends on acute hearing and vocalization. If you have ever punctured an eardrum, you know how disoriented you become. This is what happens to these animals. Your staff has proposed viable and reasonable mitigation measures. The Navy chose not to adhere to these measures in the last iteration. Probably the damage was not documented, and so they deny any damage. By the Navy's own estimate, even 300 miles from the source, their sonic waves can retain an intensity up to 140 decibels, 100 times more intense than the level known to alter behavior of large whales.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Irene Gilgoff.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I'm an Orange County resident, and I'm here to support the NRDC position.
Your name again for the record.
Irene Gilgoff. My question to the Navy is, how can the Navy expect to protect us without recognizing its need to protect the planet on which we live? A proposal that would perpetuate harm to 8.8 million marine mammals cannot in any way offer to us as inhabitants of a water planet any degree of protection. We are dependent on the ocean for 50% of all the oxygen we breathe, and yet we continue to take it for granted and use it without considering the consequences of our actions. The animals that would be harmed by this proposal are an important part of this ecosystem. We in California, in Southern California, now have 10% of the remaining blue whale population visiting our coast every year. We have multiple fin whales, and of course, the gray whale passes our coast twice each year. The harm that the Navy will inflict on our coast will set back any of the advances that we have already made. In the ocean, as they've mentioned, the most important sense is hearing. Deafness to a whale is a sentence that the animal sentences the animal to certain death. How can the Navy protect our coast by damaging it? So for the sake of the whales, for the sake of the ocean, and for the sake of my grandson, so that he can see these animals throughout his lifetime, please let the Navy know that we do not believe that they can protect our coast by damaging it. You spoke for the coast very eloquently and courageously by defending it against the PG&E proposal. I thank you sincerely for that. Please take the next step and defend it again. I am here again to support the NRDC recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bailey Adams?
This is my grandson, Bailey Adams.
And Bailey, hi.
And when I spoke against the seismic testing, as we left, he said, how come I didn't get to say something? So I said, sign him up. He only has one word.
Orca.
The orcas that he loves so
orcas,
much.
Orcas, okay.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You, Bailey. Good job. Okay, Teresa DeBono, Lyndia Story, and Lance Leonard. Good luck following that last speaker.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here and being given the opportunity to convey my concerns.
We need your name for the record.
My name is Teresa DeBono. I have 30 years' experience in dealing with all the environmental laws and regulations of the state and the nation. I have been dispatched here by the dolphin community to enter testimony on their behalf. Billy, would you please roll the tape? Please watch this video. This was made in San Diego Bay when the megapod of dolphins appeared. This is an extremely unusual behavior. You're bringing the entire population of the common dolphins into an area where the Navy is proposing to expand its operations. Is the video working, Billy?
Yes, it's rolling.
Okay, roll it, yeah. Is the audio on it too?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. So this was video taken aboard one of the Hornblower cruises for whale watching on February 14th. And the people aboard were videotaping the pod of dolphins, but I don't hear the audio. There we go. This is San Diego Bay, filmed February 14th, 2013. So this is just happening last month. When I see a species behavior acting so differently than they commonly do, they are sending me a signal to investigate. So I've only been watching, they called me 2 weeks ago to identify what is the problem, what is occurring here that's impacting them. What I've found is that now I'm here testifying here on their behalf because the Navy has violated every environmental act, every permit they've been issued. It's been issued falsely. They've been saying the National Marine Fisheries Service gives them a take permit. They estimate 2,000 species of common dolphin are taken every year. They get a blanket permit every year to take 2,000 common dolphins along with all of the others, when really the take has been going on for 40 to 50 years. So the cumulative take of this one species is 100,000.
Thank you.
And that's what you're seeing in the video. So pay attention to what the species is trying to
Thank
convey.
Thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Lyndia Story, then Lance Leonard, then Kim McDermott.
Hi. If you don't mind, I'd like to invite Kim to come up too.
Of course.
We're representing what we call ourselves as Whale and Dolphin Watch.
All right. And we'll give you 4 minutes between the two of you. Pull the mic. Yeah. We'll give
you
4 minutes between the two of you.
Good.
Kim.
Good. We recently became very concerned with what's going on in the oceans. And As an aside, I don't have expertise as a marine biologist, but I do have expertise at having lived on a small ship and sailed the Pacific Ocean. So my experience is more direct experience with the cetaceans. So what I wanted to do is to find out if there were more people, Kim and I, that were also concerned about this. And so recently, within the last 7 or 8 months, we posted a petition online letting people know what the Navy was proposing and also asking if they were in support of that, and if they were not, to put their name on a petition. And the first petition that we actually filed, we ended up, and this figure is not current, it's several days old, but 561,689 people said that they oppose this and want something to be done that's different. We now have another petition up and online, and we were asking people in this second one whether or not they concur, or to let the marine fisheries know that they do not concur with this. And I think the same thing would actually occur with this commission. I think that I could speak for that. As of several days ago, we had 100, and this has been up for a couple of weeks, 135,974 signatures. So we're really representing a lot of people in the country who are very concerned about this issue, and not just concerned about the whale and dolphins, but really concerned about the health of our oceans. And something that is not addressed anywhere are really simple things like what happens with the other fish population. Some of the research I've done indicates that those have declined substantially. And not being a marine biologist, I would still assume that probably the use of sonar has something to do with that. Also, there's a lot of recent research over the last 20 or 30 years in how sound affects plants. And again, you know, no mention of what happens to our sea plants, to the algae that provides 50% of our oxygen. What are the long-term effects of that? So you as a commission actually have the opportunity, since the Navy is deploying the sound in 70% of the world's oceans, you have an opportunity to really take a stand on this and to make this different, to allow a period of time of no testing, no sonar, to see if our oceans can actually regenerate. And I apologize for taking so much time. Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim McDermott, and I drove here from Sedona, Arizona. And like I said, Lindy and I have collaborated over the last several months. And our intention is to raise that awareness and connection to the oceans, to the planet, and what's happening in them. And there is just, there needs to be a better way. And as the commander had said, as far as his training ground of driving a teenager inside of a parking lot, the parking lot doesn't have hundreds of thousands and millions of dolphins that are being killed and maimed.
Thank you very much.
And if I might pass something on.
Actually, give it to staff and they'll hand it out to us. Lance Leonard?
Hello, I'm Lance Leonard, a private citizen, and just want to start by saying I'm not anti-Navy. My father was in the Navy. I've taught classes for the Navy in the 80s. I've traveled across the Pacific Ocean on Navy ships, as well as on my own small sailboat. I've had a lot of experience close and personal with dolphins and whales, and I would just say that I'd like to bring this to a larger stage and just say that this is only one area of our planet that this is happening. It's actually happening worldwide. The estimate of so-called takes is much larger than the nearly 10 million that was mentioned. It's actually over 30 million worldwide. And so this is not the only place this is happening. That's one thing. Another thing is to use the analogy that the gentleman from the Navy used earlier. I've also raised many children. I have grandchildren. And I would say that if I was teaching my son to drive or my daughter, and I said, you can do whatever you want, but don't go on the freeway, and they did, I would not give them the keys again. And I think this is a really simple case of the Navy needs to follow the rules. And I think that there's been some great movement towards some responsible rules proposed here. And I think they've had their chance to try to follow them, and they've, you know, made their intentions clear. So I would ask that you consider that what you're doing is not just for California, but as a model for what can happen worldwide. As someone else said, we can't protect ourselves, which is the Navy mission, if we're destroying our oceans. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Nancy Sanks, and Kristen Armstrong, and Daniel Von Wetter.
Hi, my name's Nancy Sanks. I'm a wife, a mother, and a grandmother, and I speak from my heart for the next seven generations. I would just like to express my heartfelt concern about what's happening and the balance of our natural world. Man wasn't made to live in a man-made world. We were made to live in a natural occurring environment, and by disturbing the natural living creatures in the ocean, this is huge. As other people have said before, who are much more knowledgeable than me, I think everyone at our core level knows the importance of hearing, of the sonar, and we respect the animals, the marine mammals, the dolphins and the whales. We all have some sort of affinity with that. And I would just like you to consider what's going to be left seven generations from now. Will they still be able to, our great-great-great-great-grandchildren be able to see dolphins and whales in the wild? Or, you know, will we continue on this path? When man wreaks havoc on nature, we call it progress. But when nature wreaks havoc on the world, we call it disaster. I think we need to refocus that, and I know not all people think that, but this is, you know, been our past, and a little bit of arrogance on our part as not partners in this world, but as, you know, controllers. So thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you. Kristen Armstrong?
Thanks for the opportunity to speak. My day job, I am an acoustic specialist in meditation discipline, and I study the sound and harmonics and the effect on the human brain, and on which can be extended to all species. And I would just like to remind the commission, I had to look for your actual mission statement, but the mission statement that I read this morning was that your mission is to protect, maintain, enhance, and restore the coastal environment with its natural and man-made resources. And I want to speak to the destructive power of sound. This is my business. This is what I do. So sound is and has been used as a very effective torture device. We have seen the effects of it on the slides here this morning. I would like to just say that there are other ways to find, there must be other ways to find North Korean submarines in our coastal waters other than using this program. The Navy is a great innovator, the military is a great innovator, and I would just ask the human beings that are of the Navy, please consider that if there was a sonar program in your neighborhood.
You need to speak into the mic, please.
Please consider if there were sonar programs in our own neighborhoods, human neighborhoods, they would not exist because we would not allow it. We could not sleep, we could not eat, we could not tolerate that level of sound. So the only rationalization this commission has as a response to this petition is a complete, unmitigated objection. Under the present circumstances, what level of harm? 8.8 million harm levels? Does this justify this level of torture? It's madness. Thank you.
Thank you. Daniel Von Wetter, and then we'll have Melinda DeCure, Karen Lang McNabb, Jane Cartville, and Mandy Davis.
Hi, I hold degrees in environmental studies and biology.
Need your name for the record.
Daniel Von Wetter. I hold degrees in environmental studies and biology with an emphasis on ecosystem management. And I feel the need to point out that the emphasis being placed on marine mammals, while key, is taken away from the overall effects that these experiments are having on the ecosystem as a whole. Many of these marine mammals are keystone species in the ecosystem, meaning that their presence is responsible for keeping the balance of the entire ecosystem. The effects of these experiments are having a ripple effect through the entire system that as yet has hardly been quantified. It's incredibly irresponsible to continue this course from an ecological perspective. We are messing with the very foundation of the system. These effects will take years to manifest, but they will, and when they do, it will be exponentially worse than what we're talking about here today. So in short, I think we're kind of missing the point. You know, it's not just about the marine mammals. It's much, much bigger. Thank you.
Thank you. Melinda DeCure.
Good morning. My name is Melinda DeCure. Thank you for providing this opportunity to speak on this subject. We use this planet and its resources to serve our own purposes, but with that power also comes great responsibility. The whales and dolphins who will be hurt and or killed by the sonar used in these naval exercises cannot stand before you today to ask for your help. Neither can those who have already perished. How much more harm has to occur before we come to our senses and stop these insane practices? Surely in this, the most powerful country on Earth, we can find a way to both advance our military aims while ensuring our oceans remain clean, safe, and quiet for their inhabitants. The Navy can find a way to do both. It has the resources. All that remains is the effort and the will. As a taxpayer, the Navy works for me, and on this subject, I want my views to be heard. I urge the Commission to honor its obligations and take all steps necessary to protect our marine mammals and to demand the Navy's full cooperation in this regard. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Karen Lang McNabb.
Good morning. My name is Karen Lang McNabb, and I am living in Orange County. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I also appreciate hearing the Navy's report and knowing how they are defending our coastline and our country. And it's excellent the way that we are being defended. However, if we're being defended in a way that we are also being destroyed, our environment and our wildlife, we are destroying the state of California in order to save it. I don't appreciate that, and I don't think many Californians would either. I would agree with a previous speaker who said there's got to be another way, and I would like to see the Navy begin to put some research into an alternative way to do that. As far as where we go forward from here, surely there's a better way to mitigate, and in order to do so, I agree with the NRDC recommendations. The whales and the dolphins also represent an economic benefit. This is one of the ways that, one of the industries we still have. The tourism industry is one of the things that still goes on, and we want to support that as well, in addition to, of course, the wildlife and the things that we love about our planet. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jane Cartmill? Is Jane here? Mandy Davis?
Hello again. My name is Mandy Davis from Morro Bay, and I represent the Coast Alliance, which is a group of organizations, individuals that represent thousands of individuals. I also have had conversations with numerous people in Hawaii, and they are all hoping that you make the decision, the wise sound decision that we know you will be making today, which is to completely oppose this project. There are very, very few occasions that I am rendered speechless. And this happens to be pretty darn close to one of them. The scope, the magnitude, the ramifications of this project are mind-blowing. Mind-blowing to me. I mean, I'm really having a hard time keeping it together here because I have been working for and speaking for cetaceans and marine creatures for a good portion of my life. And to see on the screen a reminder of the kind of damage, of the kind of torture that the Navy is quite willingly prepared to do in the name of testing and war games is something that I can barely even begin to control. But I will. In a perfect world, I wouldn't have to be up here. In a perfect world, the Navy would recognize their responsibility to the ecosystem that they are so reliant upon. In a perfect world, I will expect agencies like yourself to make decisions for that ecosystem and for me, and I know you will do that.
Thank you. Mark DeVoe, then Denise Bradshaw, Donna, and Ramona Casios. Is Mark here, Mark DeVoe? Denise Bradshaw?
Good morning. My name is Denise Bradshaw. I want to thank you for having the hearing today. I want to thank you for all that you've done for California mammals, including us. And I want to thank the Navy for protecting us. I appreciate everything. I noticed a couple of things that I want to speak to. The first one is that I think that the Navy would, after not having attended to the mitigation requests from the Coastal Commission so far, that they would submit a report about the number of mammals being expected to possibly be killed, maimed acoustically, et cetera, is quite amazing. That they would submit that and think that we would agree to it. I am asking you, as your mission statement says, you are the protectors for our environment, our coastal and ocean environment, to stand up now and oppose this strongly. Because what has been done in the past hasn't worked. We sort of had an interesting dynamic here when Commander Downey stood up. I respect you. I want us to be able to work together. Okay. It's like, though, I've heard him talk about working on our mitigations, not our mitigations, our, the Navy's. And when he had a chance to give us a response, it was not taken. I think you're the guys that need to get it going. Do your job. Thank you.
Thank you. Donna and then Ramona Casios.
Hello, my name is Donna. I'm from Occupy San Diego. Thank you very much for letting me speak. I grew up on the beach, and the one thing I know is I can tell when something's going on in the ocean. You just need to look at what's washing up on the sand. When 40 years have passed that these types of practices have been in place, and we're hearing things like that the best available data on marine animals is being used, we're hearing that the effects are temporary and behavioral only, And yet we know, and we all learned in grade school, that whales communicate over vast ocean areas. I don't believe the disinformation and the misinformation that we're being given by the Navy. I'm tired of listening to people that are trying to walk all over this planet. I'm tired of listening to people who are making excuses for doing the right thing and trying to justify the extinction and the death and the torture of any living beings on this planet when we are all connected and we depend on an ecosystem that is rapidly degrading as we see it. When I was going to come here today, all I could think about was the Douglas Adams book from the Hitchhiker's Trilogy, where the dolphins all leave the earth and they say the title of the book is So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. I don't want to see that happen. I don't want to see that happen in our lifetime, in any future lifetimes. So I'm urging you today, every once in a while, there comes a time when people have to stand up and do the right thing and stand up to bullies and to people who just want to have their own way. This is a time to act for the benefit of humanity and the planet. Please choose to oppose. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ramona Cassiosi. I'm from LA area, and I am one annual band of Mission Indians from San Juan Capistrano, and I'm here to represent my ancestors that lived through these whales and dolphins, and I just hope and pray that they get to live their life, and as we do, because each creature does tell a story through us all, and I just really want to protect our people that that are here and that are still living today, and I just pray that maybe Creator could open up everybody's hearts and spirits and bring it in, and we could keep our people alive for our people. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to take a little break, and I'd like to talk with folks about the procedures going forward. We have, if everybody who has signed up speaks, we have about 2 more hours of public testimony. The practical problem is that we're going to have trouble holding a quorum up here. We have several commissioners who must leave shortly. So during the break that we're going to take, I urge all of you who have a similar position to see if you can group together and perhaps have one spokesperson speaking for several of you. You know, the risk is that if you really feel that you have something to say that hasn't been said to the commission yet, of course you should say that. But the more time we take in the public hearing and hearing testimony, which is actually not that different from earlier public testimony, it's the less time that the commission has to debate and negotiate on this. So I would urge folks to get together of like minds and see if they can have one spokesperson for a large group of you. And I would also remind everybody that during the break, we are in the middle of a public hearing, so please don't approach any commissioner about anything having to do with this topic. And finally, there was a third thing which has completely slipped my mind. At the end of the break, we are going to cut off speaker slips. So there'll be no additional speaker slips submitted but when we reconvene. Thank you. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I would really urge people to do this participation because I'm one of the commissioners that needs to leave at 11:30 and have a very strong opinion. And if I can't voice my opinion, I will feel bad that my piece isn't part of that discussion. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. So we'll take a short break. All right, I'd like to call the California Coastal Commission back to order. If I could ask everybody to take their seats. If I could ask everybody to take their seats, I'd appreciate it. And what I'm going to do as we go forward, I'm assuming that people have taken to heart my request that... Oh, hey, yeah. I forgot Vanessa gave me this. Thank you. If I could please ask you to take your seats. Thank you.
Now, I'm going to assume that you have all honored my request in order to group together. So as I call a name, if you are going to allow somebody else to speak for you, you can just stand up and wave, and I will acknowledge that you're here, but don't feel the need to take the mic, and that would be very appreciated. The other way we could do this is if one speaker who comes to the mic, everybody who is in agreement with them stands, and by standing, you then are ceding your time from the mic. So either way, I'm going to call some names here. Victoria Wagner-Ross, Sarah Gepp, Christy Paris, Nicole Martel. Are any of these folks need to speak? Come forward. You're standing. Thank you.
Thank you.
All of those folks are standing in support.
Sarah Gepp.
Sorry?
Sarah Gepp.
Yes.
From Malibu, California. I am opposed to the Navy Sonic project. Reason being, if you'll show the webpage, please. As you can see, this area is a map of the Pacific, where you can see down in Chile. My heritage is Mapuche, which is an indigenous Chilean tribe, as you can see in the square box down there at the south of Chile. You can also see that these islands were all traveled by canoe all the way up to Northern California, and in addition to the Chumash territory, which is in Malibu. Artifacts are being found in the Pacific dating to pre-Columbian times, all the way to the time of European contact. My fear is that these cultural resources will be obliterated and that our heritage will be compromised in that respect. I ask that you oppose the Navy's proposal and no sonic testing be done. I thank the Navy and all the servicemen and women for their commitment and their service. Chaltu mai.
Thank you. All right. My system isn't working because I don't know who it was who stood up. Victoria Wagner-Ross. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Christy Paris.
Hi, I'm a private citizen, also with Occupy San Diego. I'd just like to thank you all for being here today, and thanks to you guys for coming out. 8 million harms to animals is way too many just for testing. This is ridiculous. The Cold War is over. Say no to this. Stand up, fight back.
Thank you. Nicole Martel? Thank you. Michelle Bolo? And you have somebody here who's ceding their time. Do you want the full 4 minutes?
I'm going to shorten it.
Good.
My name is Michelle Bolo, 60-year coastal resident of California. I'm going to go right to just some of the new information that I've been working with a group of 36 researchers. And I do have one other concern regarding detonation devices, presuming the area of concern has been determined to be clear. And from the point of X to detonation, let's say it's 10 to 15 minutes. What's to say that that large pod of dolphins doesn't swim into the area of concern once the detonation interval has occurred, and that mitigation is inadequate. But apart from that, the 36 researchers are looking at what's called whale trap beaches, of which there are many on our coastline from San Diego right up through Santa Barbara. And even using a quick survey of Google Earth demonstrates a very surprising result that large stretches of the coastline fit that criteria for what's called acoustic dead zone, areas where cetacean biosonar is compromised to the point of being completely ineffective. The criteria for an acoustic dead zone is a shallow, sloping, sandy beach with a floor slope of less than 0.5 degrees Gradually sloping sandy beaches may produce poor or confusing echolocation signals as sound waves are deflected rather than reflected. Large stretches in SoCal fit the acoustic dead zone criteria, not just for whales, but also for dolphins. The opportunity for stranding now becomes a more dramatic concern. Whale trap beaches.
Thank you very much.
I just want to say one more thing since she ceded her time to me, and that is my husband spent 20 honorable years in the Navy, much of it in submarines. He and his shipmates could hear whales right through the skin of the hull. He says that crew members were always in awe, that the experience was a spiritual one, and those Navy men knew something that the Navy doesn't talk about. But my bet is near everyone in this room
knows. You need to speak in the mic.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If I call your name and you are prepared to cede your time to the commission, just stand up so I know that's what you're going to do. Kirk Lieber.
Hi, thanks for listening to me. I will make this quick. My name is Kurt Lieber. I'm president and founder of Ocean Defenders Alliance. I remove abandoned commercial fishing gear. I'm on the bottom of the ocean almost every week. The dramatic effect that this sound has on animals is not being actually talked about here. When I'm down there and I hear one of these cargo vessels go overhead, it's deafening to me. I don't know which way is up. And the fish just scatter. It alters everyone's habits, and their reproductive rates are severely reduced. So I just want to make that aware. My friends, the fish, are going to suffer in this, and I want to make that point. Thanks.
Thank you. Beta Johnson. Is Beta here?
I'm just a private citizen, and I just wanted to, first of all, thank NRDC for being here and expressing all of their good knowledge. And secondly, I was appalled when I heard how the Navy had simply been ignoring all of the recommendations by all of the scientists. Thank you.
Thank you. Renee Owens, you have several people ceding their time. How much time are you asking for?
Well, I'm not sure, but I'll try to be quick, but it's more than 2 minutes.
3 minutes?
No, I said more than two. So.
I understand. I asked if you could do it in three. We're trying to move this along.
Yes, I get it. Thank you very much. My name is Renee Owens. I'm here for the National Sierra Club. I'm a member of the Wildlife and Endangered Species team. For the record, we are supporting the determinations of the NRDC. My background personally is I've studied dolphin bioacoustics for my graduate research, and I am, for the past 20 years, have been an environmental consultant in Southern California, specializing in wildlife and regulatory compliance. So I'm here. It seems like not much has changed except about this debate, except the Navy has ramped up their request for take to include a much broader scope, as you know. I'm not going to stand here and talk about the details of the debate that others have. What I want to talk about is what we do know for sure. We know for sure, number one, that sonar harms, injures, kills dolphin, whales, and probably much more. This is not open for debate. Number two, if we took what we know about the effect of sonar on ecosystems and populations, and we compared it to what we don't know, suffice to say, it's the tiniest tip of the iceberg. And the debate is about this unknown. And so what we do know, other than generating numbers for the EIS, which we have to do, is that if you ask any marine mammalogist worth his or her salt, who's not have to take a side for the benefit of their career, they will say the same thing. There is so much we don't know, we cannot definitively say things about impacts to species ecosystems. And I've outlined a lot of this in the comments from the Sierra Club that's been distributed to you. One problem with the Navy's analysis is that their overriding assumption that there are no observable changes in short-term behavior then there will be no severe impacts to the population. This assumption is not well supported, and there is evidence to the contrary. We had humpback whales off of Newfoundland exposed to explosions that showed very little behavioral reaction. However, later it became evident the same whales were dying from being caught in fishing gear and gill nets due to most likely impairment of their hearing. So there's much we don't know, and it's pretty much a black hole when it comes to discussing behavior and physiology and species that spend 95% of their time underwater. So based on these assertions, what we can say is that when we know there's evidence of potential for tremendous harm, we have to follow the precautionary principle. And in summarizing, we need to follow the exemptions we've laid out and the NRDC has laid out for mitigation far and beyond what the Navy has proposed thus
Thank
far.
You.
Thank you.
Joe Hooperich, Kiona, thank you. Kiona Dalen. Thank you. Jennifer Dalen? A triple thank you. All right. Kim Critchard. Is Kim here?
Yes. I'll try to make this fast. My name is Kim Critchard, and I'm a citizen, and this issue has really bothered me. I think that the Navy has been cavalier in their reaction to how the commission has ruled in the past, and I can't imagine that they would do anything different. If I could just quickly read this email that I sent, it might make it easier for me. It is the job of the Coastal Commission to protect wildlife and determine whether the Navy's proposed sonar tests will, in fact, undermine this goal. From all information available on the Navy's previous tests of this nature, it appears as though the Commission's suggestions were disregarded and the Navy's testing resulted in the deaths and damage to thousands of marine mammals and fish. There is nothing that will make this cruel punishment to innocent animals in our California Pacific justifiable. Nature's delicate balance is already threatened by pollution, sewage, oil spills, trash, chemical waste, overfishing, and even the effects of temperature changes elicited by the nuclear power plants on the California coast. And now the Navy wants to institute sonar testing that will wipe out huge numbers of mammals and fish. This will only serve to further throw the balance of nature into a tailspin. It is bad enough that we human beings kill one another, but to suck innocent wildlife into the abyss as well is unconscionable. If we humans need to need more efficient killing machines, we can make them in laboratories that do not threaten the planet's other beings. We can do it without threatening the Earth's balance. We cannot allow the creation of such wasteful, careless, and inhumane collateral damage that includes dire threats to the well-being of whales and dolphins. This reckless disregard for life must not be sanctioned by the California Coastal Commission. Dominion over the animals did not, I believe, encompass killing and maiming the helpless, gentle creatures, all toward creating better killing methods of our fellow human beings. Endangering these animals is a twisted as
much.
Logic as possible.
Michael Sullivan?
Great job,
Michael? Cassandra Hurd? Thank you very much. Christy Orchman? Christy here, Cedar Time? Helen Bourne? Thank you ever so much. Eden Seibert? M. Tornador? Mark Bowers?
Can you go ahead and speak?
You are who?
I am Tornator.
Great, thank you. Let me just make sure you may when we get to his name, yeah. Mark Bowers?
Yes, here. I'll make it short. My name is Mark Bowers, and I'm from Crystal Cove, Newport Coast, California here. And I just wanted to speak about or just brings up some points that haven't been brought up. Most of the sentences that have been saying here have already, or most of my stuff's already been taken. But anyways, I just wanted to say that that the Navy said 600 instances of permanent hearing loss to marine mammals and 130 mortalities. Those numbers, to me, that sentence doesn't really make sense to me, because to a cetacean, a permanent hearing loss is a slow death sentence to me, okay? And so I didn't really understand that part of their analogy. And also wanted to state that I believe that the lookouts that the Navy's been doing is definitely not enough, and because of the whales, that marine life that are down below, especially on windy and high surf days. I would love to see the Navy give us assurances that they will avoid sanctuaries, habitual areas, and biological important to, you know, which is biologically important to marine species. And also, in the past, the Navy has ignored the Coastal Commission's conditions. So I just want to, it would be great to hear that the Coastal Commission will object to the Navy's proposed training and testing activities, as they are not consistent with the California Coastal Act. In conclusion, I just want to leave everybody with this statement, profound statement that Robert Redford said. And he said, I think the environment should be put in the category of our national security. Defense of our resources is just as important as defense abroad. Otherwise, what is there to defend?
Thank you very much.
I feel that's what
Sean
he meant.
Sean Beatty?
About the environment.
And we're going to go to 1 minute apiece.
I'm going to speak, but I'm cutting it in half. Okay. I'm Swan Beatty. For dolphins, who researchers have documented as self-aware, noting that they actually call each other by name, this is a brutal and inhumane death sentence. For whales, such as the great blue whale, who can communicate over thousands of miles, such sonic stress affects reproduction and communication so much that whales simply stop vocalizing. What happens to our oceans when the whales just simply stop singing? A deaf whale, a silent whale, is a dead whale. Our oceans give us our air, our water, our food, and regulates our climate. The ocean literally inhabits human life. And as a citizen of this great country, I feel like it is my duty, my responsibility, my right to stand up here today and speak for the cetaceans of our oceans that have no human voice. So please object this testing, and please do not allow this to happen to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephanie Selfish. And again, if you are going to cede your time, just let me know.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Stephanie Sikich. I'm with the Surfrider Foundation. I'm here representing our 250 members and supporters from around the globe. I just want to make a philosophical point really quickly here. Surfrider relates to people who live and work on the ocean. In our world, we call them watermen, the people who use and respect the ocean. If a concurrence is granted today, we request that the Navy act like true watermen and protect the ocean that they work on and the inhabitants that live there. Less philosophically, I'd like to point out, in regulatory and biological terms, the marine protected areas were not even brought up today. I mean, I'm sure you guys know how contentious this process was. We were part of it. Literally, tears were shed. If they go in and do testing in and around marine protected areas, it's disrespecting the work that Californians have done for nearly 10 years to do this. Finally, most importantly, in terms of regulatory measures, underneath the Marine Life Protection Act, they're required to have a baseline of monitoring these marine protected areas. If they go in and do this, it's going to completely interfere with the biological monitoring that's supposed to take place there, and it would set a horrible negative precedent for the entire state, because the marine protected areas in the South Coast are connected to the marine protected areas in the rest of the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Sabine Kurtz-Camacho. Thank you very much. Joey Ricano.
Joey Ricano, Ocean Outfall Group. I've got 1,000 letters here against HSTT. I want everybody to know that we have to go fast if we want to win. And I want also to say that the Navy is being an arrogant bully, and we're not going to let anybody bully our whales, and that the Navy is signed to the Memorandum of Understanding about those MPAs, and that's all I'm going to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Kenneth Perry. Is Kenneth here? Jerry Robinson. Oh, okay.
Kenneth Perry. Just to be clear, I'm not sure if my colleagues understood, but when the Greenpeace folks were ceding time, they were trying to cede it to me. So I'll try to be brief. We'd like to thank you first off for Diablo Canyon. That was excellent work. You guys know what your mission statement is, and you do a great job of fulfilling it. And this is clearly in violation. Navy comment and testimony made clear they don't intend to mitigate this properly, as the science has shown that needs to be done. So that being said, we fully support the recommendation of NRDC. I'd also like to endorse the statement of our colleague from Surfrider. And just from our perspective as Greenpeace, who talks to the public every day, including Navy and Marine personnel, never met one person who isn't absolutely astounded and flabbergasted by this when they learn the details of it. So from my perspective, talking to the public, they can't believe that these things like this go on behind these doors, you know? So there you go. I'd also just like to underline the point that the biologist, Mr. Van Wetter, made earlier that, thank you. Like I said, my colleagues have tried to save me some time.
He can have another minute. Yeah, go ahead.
It's not just cetaceans we're talking about here when we talk about 8 million harm. The entire ecosystem, for all that we know that this damages cetaceans and the science there is new, we know even less about how this affects microorganisms that are at the base of the food chain. And this is an important national resource as well as a natural resource that has an inherent value. And to just wipe out an entire ecosystem is unacceptable. And you guys know that. It is your mandate. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And thank you for grouping together. Jerry Robinson.
My name is Dr. Cherry Robinson. I am not a marine scientist. I am a psychologist, and I study human beings. And I've worked with many, many human beings in my life, and I've watched the Navy, and I've watched people in my environment. I'm a native Southern Californian. What I know is that the people I know in the Navy have great integrity, and they genuinely care about the ocean. What I also know is that when all this gets stuck in bureaucracy, and there's a lot of words about science here and science there, it gets lost and we don't see it anymore. What we know is cetaceans have families. They love each other. They care for their children. This is at its core a question of morality and a question of integrity. We can't just go murdering, first degree murder, we've thought this out, without thinking about the end result. So thank you.
Thank you. Jack Hamlin? Are you ceding time? No. Patricia Vidal, are you ceding time? No. All right. Bobby Pollack, ceding time? Is Bobby Pollack here?
She's here.
Is she ceding time?
I don't think so.
All right, go ahead. Jack Hamlin.
My name is Dr. Jack B. Hamlin. I'm an educator, but today here I am here as a representative of an officer of the San Diego County Council Green Party, and I represent 125,000 Green Party members in the state of California. We support the NRDC, Surfrider, and Greenpeace and their positions. I had quite a nice talk, but you seem to be cutting us down here. The harm the U.S. Navy proposes to inflict on Southern California marine mammals and other species is not only extraordinary and unprecedented, it is shameful. And unlike a play in a theater, the Navy's theater is destroyed and the audience is killed and maimed. It is more like attending a play and having a bomb unexpectedly tossed into the theater. We would call that an act of terror, and in this case, it's an act of terrorism. The California Coastal Commission has stood up for Diablo Canyon and the Trestles Toll Road, and we ask you to do the same today. Thank you very much.
Patricia Vidal, if you're going to speak, if you could be ready to take the mic, we'd appreciate it.
Hi, thank you for letting me speak. My name is Patricia Vidal. I'm a graduate student at San Diego State University, and I study public health. And I urge you to please oppose this, and I agree with the previous speakers on the NDRC position. National Resource Defense Council position.
Thank you very much. Bobby Pollack, while she's coming forward.
Bobby Pollack. Okay. I'm so hard of hearing that I didn't know she said, sit down if you don't want to talk. And that's what you're doing to the animals. They're killing them. This is a continent, this ocean out here, and it's living, breathing things that you're killing. And I want you to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Maury Hexamer, Dan Murray,
Dana.
Thank you, Jim Pugh.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Dana Murray. I'm a marine and coastal scientist with the nonprofit Heal the Bay in Los Angeles. Thank you for your time this morning. We submitted a comment letter with NRDC and CCPN, but I wanted to add a couple of additional comments. The first one is that after hearing the Navy speak about having the greatest Navy in the world, using the greatest science, I feel like the greatest scientific mitigation should be used in this instance. They can't just stay at the same status quo with their mitigation measures. So the best available science to improve these mitigation measures to their activities should be used. I embolden you to use your position today and your knowledge to give them good advice on what they should follow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jim Pugh. I'm the Conservation Chair of the San Diego Audubon Society. Section 30230 of the Coastal Act says that marine resources will be maintained, enhanced, and where feasible, restored. It also says the uses of the environment should be carried out in a manner that will sustain the biological productivity of coastal waters. Those marine resources also include seabirds as well as marine mammals. The Navy documents state that they anticipate impacts will be low to seabirds and fish. But aside from three endangered species, they provide absolutely no information to allow you to substantiate that. How many seabirds will we kill? You have no idea. Will some of the seabirds get bins and die eventually? Will sonar damage the senses that they need for navigating to be able to find shelter, foraging areas, and nesting areas? Will it degrade their hearing, which will interfere with their mating process? You've been provided absolutely no information. We strongly urge that you not find this consistent until you're given enough information to know whether it really will affect have a serious impact on seabirds or not. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is Mari Haxmer seating time? Dave Anderson? Your seating time?
No.
Oh, that's right. Are you seating time? No. I understand, but do you want to speak?
Yes.
Would you come to the mic then, please?
I'm trying to.
2 minutes.
Okay. My name is Dave Anderson. I run Captain Dave's Dolphin and Whale Safari in Dana Point, California. And I formed Orange County's only whale rescue group, and I've been personally involved in disentangling whales. And I've seen how whale watching has grown in the last 9 years. 9 years ago, if I saw one blue whale, I was on ABC News. It was that unusual to have a blue whale show up. Now, last year, we had nearly 1,000 sightings of blue whales on just our boat. And there used to be only one whale watching boat that was out in the summer, and that was up in Santa Barbara when I started. Now, every single harbor along the California coast does year-round whale watching. And this is means a lot of money to a lot of people, for one thing, and really should be taken seriously. I have seen, I've been out on trips. We see dolphins or whales 98% of the time we go out. So almost every time we go out, we see dolphins and whales. And you can't just go to a marine sanctuary and see a blue whale. They are everywhere. They're all up and down our coast. And so there's no way that they can just limit, things. These guys have got to get their boats way offshore and get away from this area. We have huge herds of dolphin. We have pods up to 10,000 dolphin. Don't believe that 100,000 thing. It's about 10,000. My video of the dolphin stampede went viral, like 2 million people watched it. And these dolphins are regularly out there doing this stuff. It's not a crazy, unusual thing. This is something that happens nearly, once a month or so we see this.
Thank you very much.
You got another 2 minutes, right?
No, you had 2 minutes total.
No, she succeeded her time.
You know, it's really not a good idea to argue with the chair. We've cut down to a minute apiece. So, Roxanne Lagunas? I'm sorry, but we need to keep a quorum here, which was a minute. Roxanne Lagunas, thank you very much. Connor Holleran, thank you very much. Kenny Roth, thank you very much. And Brandon Tabaris. Okay, Brandon, bring us home here.
All right, so my name, for the record, Brandon Tavares, and I was in the Army, and my brother was in the Navy. And the one thing that I've learned in my time in service is that you don't stop terror with war, that you don't protect with pain, and through you get peace from stopping the hurt from ever happening. And that's why I hope that the Coastal Commission will object to the Navy's sonar testing.
Thank you very much. With that, I want to be sure the Navy does not want to take 2 minutes for a rebuttal. My question is, have you changed your mind? The Navy's allowed to change their mind. Would you like it? You don't have to have it.
Yeah, thank you again. Alex Stone for... Oh, I'm sorry. Again, Alex Stone for the record. Thank you for the time. Again, I guess I would just like to reiterate a couple points. The Navy has a strong and proud history of protecting the environment while we do our testing and training in Southern California. We take that responsibility very seriously. We've also worked in the past closely with the Coastal Commission. Although we haven't had agreement, it's been sort of reflected that we've ignored conditions in the past. That really was not the case. We've worked very closely to try and reach agreement, and we have modified our activities working with the Coastal Commission. At the same time, our mitigation measures are designed to be effective. That mitigation measures need to work out there in the marine environment and allow us to do our testing and training at the same time. So, again, I'd just like to say that the environmental impacts have been studied carefully. We think that they're well understood and they're still protective of the marine environment while at the same time allowing us to do testing and training. And, again, we thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Come back to staff.
I certainly want to echo what Mr. Stone said about our working relationship. That will continue no matter what action the commission takes today. But in the interest of time, we're here to respond to any questions you might have.
All right. Thank you. So we'll come to the commission for deliberation. Commissioner Bochco.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm going to make a motion, and then if I'm seconded, I will make an amending motion. I move that the commission conditionally concur with consistency determination CD-00813 by concluding that the project would be fully consistent and thus consistent to the maximum extent practical with the enforceable policies of the CCMP, provided the Navy agrees to modify the project consistent with the conditions specified below as provided for in 15 CFR section 930.4, and I'm asking for a no vote.
Moved by Commissioner Bochco, seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I actually would like to make the amending motion, and I would like to speak to that. Is that all right?
Yes.
Okay. So what I want to do, and I'm going to look at staff just for help here, but I want to strike the word conditionally. So it would read, I move that the commission concur with consistency determination. And I would like to strike everything after CCMP, which is the provided the Navy agrees section. Is that acceptable? Does that work? Thank you. And I'm recommending a no vote on that, too, please.
No, second.
I believe you would recommend a yes vote on the amending motion no. And a no vote on the main motion.
No.
Take a break. There's
okay, can we have a break, please, because that's
yes.
A little different than...
That's quite different.
All I right. Was told.
We'll take a short break.
All right. So what I'm asking, and I apologize for the confusion, because it takes more steps than I thought, is I want to remove the language that I stated. I'm asking for a yes vote on that, to remove that language.
Yes. And the recommendation, if that is approved,
yes.
If the amending motion is approved, your recommendation on the main motion would stay the same as a no.
Correct. Thank
All
you.
Right.
I second.
Would you like to speak to your motion?
Okay. So the motion is now made?
The motion
Excellent.
Is made, but you're
Thank
speaking
you.
To your requested
you.
Request for an amendment to the motion.
Okay. As to my request for an amended motion, thank you so much. First, I want to thank staff for an incredible, detailed report. I felt very informed. I felt that I wasn't, pardon the expression, at sea at all during this deliberation, even though it's so very, very complicated and very, very important. I also want to thank NRDC and all the other environmental groups for the additional information you gave. They were very, very helpful. In particular, all the research that was out there, which I wasn't that aware of before this, and I am certainly aware of it now. The reason I am asking that this petition be, that we're going to object to the consistency is a lack of information, a lack of a lot of information. I think there's tremendous gaps in the information that the Navy has provided, and I would like to have my questions answered. I would like to see more information on a lot of the statements that you have made. Because I feel like oftentimes you make a statement, you say a certain thing is happening, that a certain model has been created, that you know that there is not as much harm as perhaps staff thinks, or but there has been nothing to back that up. So, for instance, there was nothing in the reports to say why we need to increase these activities by 1,300%. 10,000 hours a year of intense sonar, 51,000 underwater bombings over 5 years. It just seems like an extraordinary amount of activity, even though we're at the moment at peace, most places, not everywhere. But certainly the Navy, I don't believe, is involved in Afghanistan as much as, and it's only a year left. The application also doesn't explain why increasing this activity by such a great extent doesn't warrant increasing the mitigation in like manner. So all of a sudden, I know you paid attention to some of the research because you've upped the number of takings to 8 million or 8 million more or plus 8 million, but in no way do you say that is the least amount of the least amount of animals that could possibly be affected or why that's even acceptable to you. So I know a lot of it is based on your model. But I believe there's a lot of science out there, science that is available to you, science that you perhaps have even paid for, that shows that there are other ways to do this. There are other ways to mitigate harm to these animals. I also don't understand why in California, where as a state, as a group of people who love our coast and spent hours and hours and incredible amounts of taxpayer dollars to map out marine protected areas, you can't simply say, all right, we can exempt those. I mean, there is some evidence in the record that the East Coast has tried to be protecting certain sensitive areas, but apparently the West Coast doesn't want to do that. And I think the chicken and egg thing of we don't want a precedent on the West, so we can't have a precedent in the East, is not rational, and it's not acceptable. Let's see, there's others. I also think that you don't explain how you can ignore all of this research. For instance, the beak whale research. They've already shown there's 40 to 60% less of this animal. But you say they're not going to be affected. In fact, I think this is one of the species that you don't even count. You don't explain why you only think there's 10 species needing to be protected when the scientists tell you, and some of you are scientists, that there are at least 34 to be protected. You don't explain why that the Coastal Zone Management Program standard is not, well, let me rephrase that. The Coastal Zone Management Program standard is not population level impacts. The standard is very clear, but you've ignored it. The standard is maintain, enhance, and where feasible, restore. But you don't explain why your standard is different than the Coastal Zone standard. You don't explain why you're ignoring the time area closures that NOAA has recommended. NOAA, I thought, was directly involved in informing the Navy of the way to protect the ocean. You say that you've done this for 40 years, but I haven't seen any evidence of the research and the results of that research that really does show there's no harm. If you've done it for 40 years, you could, I would think, have enormous amount of research that could prove that this is really a safe activity in the ocean. But then again, to go back to the 8 million or the 8 million plus, it's difficult to even argue that it could ever be safe. I mean, you've actually kind of put yourself, well, never mind. I'll take that back. Off the record on that one. Anyway, there are a lot of questions. There are more questions than I've even stated here. I am concerned, and one of the reasons that I did not feel comfortable in supporting the staff's recommendation is because you have ignored it. And even though you have a wonderful relationship, and I appreciate that, relationships don't protect the animals. That's our job. So that's why I'm saying that we object in the entirety. And I really do hope you come back with some answers to these questions. And I also hope you come back with a robust plan to protect these mammals. Thank you.
Commissioner Zimmer, to your second.
Thank you. To save time, I'm going to jump to the chase here and to give other commissioners their due. I agree, of course, with everything Commissioner Bochco has said with respect to the lack of adequate information. I came into this wishing and hoping that there are a way that we as a commission could communicate with the Navy to move this whole process forward in a way that doesn't end up in litigation and doesn't end up in conflict, because I do believe that there is an intention to try to operate responsibly. But we've got this stumbling block of the Navy being completely unwilling to accept any of the mitigations that our staff has proposed. And there has been no explanation that is evidence-based to give us a rationale to accept your position. So in addition to all of the information insufficiencies, there you haven't come close to demonstrating that your program is consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the CZMA. I was really taken by the commander's reference to the analogy of a theater, and I understand that you see this 120,000 square mile range as your theater. But the bottom line is, we don't see it that way. That theater is occupied by creatures of the sea. And because the people of California have worked so hard and so long to create these marine protected areas, you need to start looking at this theater as a theater where some of the seats are reserved and occupied. So you need to design your program to move around those areas. And I haven't heard a word to justify, other than a general claim for a need for total flexibility at all times and places in your program. And that just doesn't hold water. So the other point that I want to make is that this has a ripple effect beyond the effect on commercial fishing in our state, beyond the effect on our multi-billion-dollar tourist industry. And I noticed that there was a letter that came in today from the Cascadia Research Collective that had an interesting point at the end, which is that this program has interfered as well with efforts to try to address problems in existing shipping routes, particularly in the Santa Barbara Channel, to avoid ship strikes of blue whales, and that efforts have been underway to find alternative shipping lane locations to route ships away from feeding concentrations, this effort has been constrained by the resistance of the Navy to placing shipping lanes south of the Northern Channel Islands, so as an alternative route. So this, again, is the absolute intransigence in addressing even these documented, mapped, protected areas and hypersensitive areas, to me, is that there becomes no basis for communication. So I really hope that you all rethink this and come back with better explanations for your position and some changes in your position that reflects that you're sharing this space with other creatures. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, thank you. And I want to tell everyone I appreciate your ceding of your time so I could have a little bit of my opinion as part of this. I agree that everything that the two commissioners have said, and that I worked very hard and diligently on the MLPA process and recognized that we have to have time in California to see if this works, because we have a plan and we are leading the world in that plan. And the Navy needs to understand the significance of the California coast in relationship to the entire world, because we're doing research that will assist future generations and what kind of takes we can have. And I also would like to reiterate that I believe that your documentation was absolutely short on every taking. And when you say that there's going to be 600 deaf animals and you don't call that a death notice, you say there's going to be 150 that die instead of, I count that as 750, just right off the top, because we know that marine life can't function without hearing. And I also believe that it's time for the Navy to maybe change its practice. We can put a rover on Mars. We could figure out how to do research for the Navy so they can come up with plans on how to find North Korean submarines. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our standard review is whether the project described in the consistency determination is consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program, that is Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act. And consistent to the maximum extent practicable means fully consistent with the enforceable policies of management programs, unless full consistency is prohibited by existing law applicable to the federal agency. This standard allows federal activity that is not fully consistent with California's coastal management program to proceed if full compliance with the CCMP would be prohibited by existing law. In its consistency determination, the Navy did not argue that full consistency is prohibited by existing law or provide any documentation to support a maximum extent practicable argument. This commission has been consistent for almost two decades in expressing concerns over the effects of anthropogenic sounds on the marine environment, particularly on marine mammals. As noted in our December 13, 2005 comments to the Marine Mammal Commission's Advisory Committee on Acoustic Impacts on Marine Mammals, this commission stated that anthropogenic noise is a recognized but largely unregulated form of ocean pollution that can deafen, disturb, injure, and kill marine life. Over the last 10 years, a growing body of evidence has shown that some form of ocean noise kill, injure, and deafen whales and other marine mammals. In particular, a sequence of marine mammal strandings and mortalities have been linked to exposure to mid-frequency sonar. There's also evidence that some affected animals do not strand but die at sea. Those are our comments in 2005. During our previous two reviews of Navy SoCal offshore testing and training, this commission has adopted conditions intended to increase protection for marine mammals, seeking, among other things, larger preclusion areas, avoidance of biologically sensitive areas, and lowering of maximum sound levels under low visibility conditions. The Navy historically has not agreed to a number of the commission's conditions and has maintained that its mitigation monitoring measures are adequate to protect marine mammals and other species. And in fact, we've ended up in litigation. based on the Navy's modeled estimates under the MMPA, which used newer, lower thresholds than the Navy applied the last time the Commission reviewed these types of activities, that is in 2008. And assuming that all the marine mammal species in the project area can be considered coastal species, the proposed activities could result in the behavioral harassment, that's level B take, under the MMPA, of up to 1.78 million marine mammals per year. Level A take of up to 336 marine mammals and up to 26 mortalities. Despite these modeled numbers and the large number of takes requested in the Navy's application to the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Navy concluded that the activities would not result in population-level effects to any species. The Navy's conclusions are not supported by the evidence. Even more compelling evidence is available now that it now than it was in 2008 to establish a need for additional avoidance, monitoring, and mitigation measures in order to find the proposed increased training and testing activities consistent with requirements of Section 3230. I also agree, and the Commission and staff has indicated in staff report that the Commission disagrees with the Navy's assessment of what constitutes coastal zone resources. The consistency determination acknowledges that coastal zone effects include coastal zone resources, include both resources permanently located in the coastal zone and mobile resources that typically move into and out of the coastal zone as part of a natural cycle. Our consistency determination notes 43 marine mammal species occur within the SoCal and Hawaii range areas, while the Navy's consistency determination considers only 10 to be coastal species. So disagree both with both the Navy's activities affect the coastal zone as well as which species are coastal zone species. References have already been made to the Navy using the same technology for the last 40 years and basically consists of observations. The Navy's purported conclusions based on its monitoring of a lack of observable effects is unconvincing and is contradicted by more scientific studies designed to more comprehensively measure marine mammal reactions to military sonar and military-like sonar sounds. These research efforts have been conducted in the same areas where the Navy intends to do the training, such as SoCal and the Bahamas. Staff in its report recommended certain conditions in order to bring the activities into consistency with the Coastal Act. And those were to establish larger shutdown areas up to 2 kilometers where marine mammals or other species are detected, avoid use of mid-frequency sonar in sensitive areas, which would include marine protected areas and marine sanctuaries, seasonal blue and gray whale areas and mitigation corridors, near shore areas and any biologically sensitive area, NMFS may designate at a future date. 3, reduce sound under low visibility conditions. And 4, limit typical vessel speeds in sensitive areas to 10 knots unless higher speeds are necessary for training. And 5, improve observer effective training. And 6, implement a contingency plan for use of nearshore explosives if mortalities recur. However, the Navy has already indicated today that they do not want any of these conditions. As provided in 15 CFR 930.4B, in the event the Navy does not agree with the Commission's conditions of concurrence, then all parties shall treat this conditional concurrence as an objection. The motion is to object. I support that. I want to thank the staff for such a very detailed report and going through and outlining what would be necessary in order to make this consistent. It is very, very clear that the Navy does not intend to comply with these suggestions. In fact, the Navy severely underestimates the amount of harm. And therefore, why go through another round of litigation when, in fact, they have already said they're not going to accept them. So I support this motion fully. Thank you.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. I will be supporting the motion. I appreciate the maker and the seconder's comments as well. I want to thank our staff for trying to find and strike a balance between national security issues and coastal resource management protection. I think that there are just a few key areas that I want to highlight in terms of why I will be supporting the motion. Before I do that, I want to thank the Navy for being here and recognize that our armed forces do provide a valuable service to our nation, and I deeply appreciate their willingness to step into danger on our behalf. Having said that, that doesn't justify the disregard for this effort to strike this balance between our coastal resources and your training exercises. I'm particularly concerned about using population level impacts as the measure, inconsistent with the language of our Coastal Act and the coastal management responsibilities under the Federal Act. In addition, I think that the broadening of the species to be acknowledged and to be considered is an important element that's missing in the work that you've undertaken. I think that the most troubling part of this, and why I would close by saying the reason I feel the motion is critically important at this time, is that for all the efforts that have been made to identify a balance and to seek a way to reach concurrence through conditions, those conditions have been steadfastly ignored through the past actions of this commission, and that means that there's really no value in trying to reach out at this time to look for where that compromise could be. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Garcia.
Thank you, and I'll be brief because I know that a couple of us have to head out here soon. I want to thank staff. I want to thank all the community that came out, obviously the NRDC. Really great information, but I also, I'm going to agree with the motions that are on the floor. I think it's the right thing to do. I do, though, think it's important that we also recognize, the service to our country that the Navy does. And I do want to mention that, I appreciate the one of the most important things that government does, and that's protect, obviously, the American people. And so thank you for that. But I do think we can come up with a better solution. So I'm going to support the motions that are on the floor. And hopefully we can move forward. And I don't know if it's possible to call the question. I know. Do we have another speaker?
It's okay. Possible, but we generally let commissioners finish,
okay.
Those
Thank
who
you.
Asked to speak. Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Garcia, I think you'll agree with this. I want to thank the folks that ceded their time. I, in turn, are going to cede my time to the commission so that we can get the vote and get on the record. So I want to just say I agree with everything that's been said. I don't think I could add anything more. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so the maker, what is before us now is an amendment to the main motion. The maker and the seconder are asking for a yes vote, and the purpose of that would be to amend the main motion. Let me ask staff, if this amendment passes, what would be the effect, the outcome in the resolution? How would the resolution be changed to reflect this amendment?
Yes, if the amendment passes, then the resolution would read, the commission hereby objects to the consistency determination by the Navy for the proposed activities, finding that the consistency determination lacks the information necessary to evaluate the project's consistency with the CCMP. That's our standard motion for a lack of information, a standard resolution for a lack of information objection.
All right, thank you. Is there any unwillingness to vote on the amendment? The maker and the seconder are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the main motion as amended is before us. And I would just like to add my thanks to our staff for doing, it's really what's become an expected fabulous job on this. The staff report is terrific, the work behind it, and I am always awed at the depth of knowledge of these things that we have in our staff. So I thank them for that. I thank the Navy for being here, and hope that you have heard clearly that we very much hope that you will come back, that you will actually work in good faith with our staff to come up with adequate mitigation, and rather than just moving ahead as if we hadn't been through this exercise. And finally, I would like to ask everybody in the public who's been here, who's engaged, who cares so deeply about this, I thank you for being here, and I thank you for being respectful to the commission, those of you who ceded time, and those of you who took less time. So thank you. Thank you for being involved, and thank you for caring. With that, I will call to the main motion. The maker and the seconder are now asking for a no vote. Is there any unwillingness to for a unanimous no vote in this? Seeing none, the motion fails, and the commission,
Hereby
the resolution is read as Mark Delaplane put on the record. Thank you. We're still in a public hearing. Joey, we're still in a public hearing here. Yeah. I have no speaker slips. Vanessa, do we have any public? All right. If I could ask folks to clear the room, we do have a speaker slip for public comment.
She wasn't here this morning.
Oh. Where is the pub? Where's the slip?
Oh. You know, I think we've got to clear the room anyway. There's no sense in calling.
It's the same person.
To clear the room. We are still in a public hearing here.
I have a packet of information for you. I'm going to make this as quick as I possibly can. I will be addressing this in considerably more detail the next meeting. What the packet of information does is it outlines, you already have the resolution before you asking for a suspension of all seismic testing. The information they have in front of you is information that is crucial in, you know, for you to understand the reasons why we're asking for this. What has become very, very evident was that the testing that PG&E was doing under everybody's noses, that, by the way, not even the DFG biologists in the area knew was going on, were happening at much higher decibel levels and at the kinds of frequencies that are most damaging to marine creatures. So this information is very important. We're going to continue to put this in front of the CSLC, but I would like to ask for your, you know, basically requesting your enforcement people and for the CCC to take a very active stance on this. Here is what is incredibly disturbing, because this is going to be coming before you. I was just at the CPUC, the Independent Peer Review Panel, meeting in San Francisco. PG&E made their presentation, which they are now starting to analyze what obviously were 3D tests that they were doing over the last 3 years. Edison made a presentation as well. And according to the information you have in front of you, especially at the Point Bouchon test, which is an MPA, they were utilizing technologies called boomers and sparkers. Those technologies were operating at upwards of 219 decibel levels at the frequencies that are most damaging. All the frequency information, all the decibel level information is available to you. Edison made a presentation to the independent peer review panel where they stated they were going to be using the same technologies
in the footprint of the testing area. In other words, they have in front of the CSL a permit request to be able to do quote-unquote low-energy testing. This is something that I am relatively sure most people are unaware of, and it's a bit of an end run. I'm really hoping the CSL is smart enough not to give them their permit so they can go through due process. But what we do know is the information that you have in front of you is directly relatable to that permit they have in front of the CSL, where they plan on doing this testing beginning August. Those decibel levels are upwards of 219 decibels, low frequencies, very damaging. You need to know about this, guys. Okie doke, take it easy.
Thank you very much. And that, Joey is looking as if he thinks he has a speaker slip in.
I thought I did.
Well, I can't find it, but take 3 minutes and fill out the speaker slip afterward.
I don't need 3 minutes. I just wanted to, and thank you so much. First of all, I wanted to apologize for my behavior there. I really did think that that was the end of the line. I would never do that to you guys. You know I love you. I just wanted to remind you once again, you see how important those MPAs are. And that was some of the most compelling testimony. I think it was Commissioner McClure. Remember the memorandum of understanding that I keep mentioning. The Navy is one of the signatories to it. NOAA is one of the signatories. The Coastal Commission yet is not. And I've been coming before you guys since before Peter died and asking you to please sign on to that memorandum of understanding. It's something we could have in our toolbox together. And a lot of agencies are already signed on, like state parks and like the state water board. So please, if you can remember, and I have a copy of it, I have a signed copy of it that was given to me by the resources resources agency. And so that's about it. And I thank you so much for your great, great work.
Thank you. And with that, it brings the meeting to a close. I thank everybody. I think it was good work. And travel safely, stay dry, and I'll see you next month in Santa Barbara.